Tomorrow's News Today.
Do you do IQ tests here?
Yep, that's what we do.
Okay, because I think I need one.
Okay, yeah, we can do that. Why do you need one?
Well, I've had some people lately telling me I have a low IQ.
Ooh, shots fired. Gosh. Who's been telling you that?
Well, some people online have been telling me that, like the president. And even my dogs are looking at me a little bit condescendingly now.
Well, we'll find out. So with this IQ test, I'll just ask you a series of simple, really common sense questions, and you just give me your best answer.
I'm actually kind of a little bit nervous right now.
Oh, yeah, you should be, because if you turn out to be what some would call a low IQ nut job, then you're pretty much a lost cause.
Well, that doesn't sound good.
All right, first question. Which word doesn't belong? Apple, banana, carrot, orange.
Is it carrot?
Very good, because it's not a fruit at all. It's clever. Next question. Who would be considered more of a traitor to their country? Person A, who receives $230 million from a foreign lobby, or person B, who receives $0 from a foreign lobby?
I mean, clearly person A.
Wrong.
Come on, that's gotta be correct.
Next. Hypothetical question. If a country has a major shipping waterway that you want to have open, and it's currently open, but they'll close it if you go to war, what would be a smart way to ensure that waterway stays open?
You don't go to war with them.
No, not even close. I mean, common sense would say go to war with that country and stay at war with that country as a way of putting pressure on them to reopen it after they've closed it because you went to war with them.
Are you playing with a full deck?
I don't play cards, but thanks for asking. Oh, and this is a good one. If you had the desire to take down an international pedophile ring, what would be the best way to follow through on that desire?
Well, you launch a full investigation using every means necessary, and then you prosecute those bastards the fullest extent of the law.
Wrong. No. You would launch an effort to prevent any investigations and prosecutions.
That can't be right.
Well, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
No, these questions are kind of weird.
Oh, I assure you, these are standardized IQ test questions, sir. Next question. Here's a scenario. You got a person, they work for America and America only. What country does that person work for?
America?
That's incorrect. They work for Iran. Next question. Who's more beautiful as a woman? France's first lady, or maybe man, or Candace Owens?
Candace Owens?
No.
Have you seen France's first lady?
I would totally do her. If she had an OnlyFans, I would subscribe. Any reasonable man would. Okay, how would you describe what America first means?
Putting America's interests first above any other foreign nation.
No, you're actually describing anti-Semitism. Yuck. Okay, last question. What year did we first land on the moon?
We've never been to the moon.
No, we've been to the moon. We go all the time. Well, your test is complete. I've never seen a score like this before.
What'd I get?
You got an IQ of 65.
Is that high?
No, that's a very low IQ.
My life is literally ruined. He was right.
Who was right?
Just don't worry about that now. My big question is, what am I going to do with my life now that I've learned that I am so stupid?
Well, just remember, you're also a nut job. But yeah, you're pretty screwed. Really, the only option I can give low IQ people such as yourself is to, like, go off and open a Somali daycare.
I am completely devastated. Are you talking about that creature looks like from the Lord of the Rings, the goblin thing that shuffles around beside Macron, whatever it is? You're saying she's beautiful? Okay. Beautiful to do like a gremlin, maybe. Good.
What's this? Oh, I've got Power Plant. Oh, what's this? I've got Methyl Drive. the two ingredients in the Power Drive bundle, which is available at thealexjonesstore.com. Take them. Pure power, pure energy, raise testosterone, improve mitochondrial function, methylation genes in enzymatic processes throughout the body. Pairs perfectly, absolutely perfectly with Methylene Blue. These are the two products made to work in conjunction together with Methylene Blue. I made them, I developed them, high quality mineral blends, methylation blends, adaptogenic herbs, functional mushrooms, and the CoQ10, the PQQ. What you want for metabolic health and mitochondrial function. I want you to win today. I want you to succeed. Take out the enemy. Choose freedom.
Big patriotic jerk.
No matter what they say, women deep down love a patriotic guy who knows how to play beach volleyball.
I appreciate his body type and sense of fashion.
Discover trends and global developments years before they happen, right here on The Alex Jones Show.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to The Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, sitting in for Alex today. We got a very, very big show for you. We'll be joined this hour, a little bit later, by Savannah Hernandez. Of course, she was assaulted by a family of goblins while out doing some good old-fashioned journalism and covering some leftist riots. We'll be talking to her and getting an update as to the latest and whether they've been arrested and charged and what exactly the future of free speech in this country is. Then we'll be joined in the second hour by Michael Yawn, in the third hour by Kyle Serafin, and then Matt Bracken takes over in the fourth hour to interview Victor Boot. That's going to be a very big interview. So giant show we have for you today. We start off with that little meme video by Maverick Darby, which is interesting. I didn't know what it was. The crew said, we got this new meme video from Darby. You want to play it? I said, of course I want to play it. Let's do it. Not knowing that it had to do with J.D. Vance, which is very coincidental because that's exactly what we're going to start the show with. J.D. Vance is not having a very good couple of days. It's actually going terribly, not just for America, but for J.D. Vance in particular and his political hope into the future. There's actually a story here. J.D. Vance can't stop losing. And I'm not even criticizing J.D. Vance for this. He's really been given some impossible tasks, but they still aren't going very well. Obviously, the negotiations with Iran came to nothing. Not that they were ever going to come to anything, but they came to absolutely nothing, as in like almost less than nothing. As in, I guess we're going to have to start over, and that's apparently what we're doing. Iran and U.S. may resume talks this weekend despite port blockade, even though it's kind of not a port blockade because tankers are passing through the Strait of Hormuz on the first day of the U.S. blockade, including Chinese vessels defying Trump's blockade of the Strait of Hormuz as U.S.-sanctioned tanker brazenly sails through waterway unchallenged. So once again, I mean, this entire Iran conflict has been a series of bluffs, essentially. And the difference between these bluffs and some of the bluffs from our past is that Iran keeps calling them. They keep just doing the thing that they're not supposed to do, and then we don't respond, and that makes us look weak and makes them look stronger. And it's basically just been that on repeat over and over again. And so, of course, as we reported, I mean, I didn't think that there was any hope for a ceasefire anyway. Like, the negotiations were always kind of a farce because it was just the sort of escape that Trump needed the last time Iran called his bluff on, you know, committing genocide against them, essentially ending their civilization forever, as he put it. So I didn't expect there to be any really positive outcome from the ceasefire, especially not with Israel bombing Lebanon and flagrant violation of the ceasefire agreement that was agreed to by Trump, according to the Pakistan PM or president. But let's go to clip number 31 here. This is J.D. Vance doing an interview following the negotiations with Iran. He sort of changed his story a little bit and then said something he probably shouldn't have said. Here's J.D. Vance on Fox News last night.
We have the military advantage. We now have additional economic pressure that we're applying on them through the blockade that we've imposed on their oil coming out of the Straits of Hormuz. So we have a lot of cards. We have the leverage, and we're going to see what the Iranians do with that.
And so that's how the blockade works. U.S. naval ships stop Iranian-flagged vessels going to the Strait through the Strait of Hormuz?
Not just Iranian-flagged vessels, Brett, but any vessel that we know is going to Iranian ports or has come from Iranian ports, you're probably going to see some vessels try to reflag themselves. But, of course, we're going to know, because we have very good intelligence, which ships are going in and which ships are coming out that are connected to Iran. But, Brett, here's the very interesting thing about all this, is that the only thing the Iranians have been able to do, they haven't, of course, beaten us militarily. They've had their military been decimated. They haven't been able to prosecute the case when it comes to weapons of war. What they have done is engage in this act of economic terrorism against the entire world. They basically threatened any ship that's moving through the Straits of Hormuz. Well, as the President of the United States showed, two can play at that game. And if the Iranians are going to try to engage in economic terrorism, we're going to abide by a simple principle that no Iranian ships are getting out either. We know that's a big deal to them. We know that applies additional economic leverage. And again, Brett, the President wants the Iranian people to thrive.
All right, so that's J.D. Vance kind of letting it slip that we're doing a little bit of terrorism. Again, maybe this sounded better in his head. Maybe he didn't mean to let it slip like this, but saying, hey, all they know how to do is terrorism and two can play at that game. Maybe not the best argument to make when this entire conflict rests on our moral superiority, our supposed and fabricated moral superiority. But it gets a little deeper than that, because if you really think about it, he said economic terrorism, a subset of terrorism, not terrorism in the classical sense, economic terrorism. And in that regard, we have been waging economic terrorism on Iran for years, and especially over the last year with Scott Bessent coming in, Treasury Secretary. We've played the clips over and over. He has made the statement over and over, multiple instances of him bragging about using tariffs, using economic warfare against Iran to inspire the uprisings that Mossad then armed in an attempt to overthrow the Iranian regime in this regime change war. Okay, so it's not exactly a, hey, if they can do it, we can do it. It's more like we've been doing it for a couple years now, and they're doing it back, I guess. But then there's, you know, not economic terrorism, just regular terrorism, which is more like what we're engaged in, bombing schools, bombing universities, bombing bridges, threatening to bomb the entire country. I mean, that's straight up terrorism. So we might be a little bit more guilty than Iran in that regard. And then there's sort of the terrorism that is aimed directly at the Iranian negotiators and leadership. From the Washington Post, this is a excerpt from one of their articles about the negotiations with J.D. Vance. They say, fourth, carry out a final barrage of leadership strikes, eliminating the Iranian officials who'd been spared for the purpose of negotiations. Iran leaders must be made to understand that their lives literally depend on reaching a negotiated settlement to Trump's liking. If they refuse to do so, they will be killed. What? I'm sorry. Are we being run by Genghis Khan? What is going on here? What, it's like every level is terrorism. We've waged economic terrorism to put us in this, in the position where, you know, they basically felt like they were being backed against a wall and needed to fight. We've done just straight up terrorism, bombing their citizens with no strategic purpose. And now I guess we're engaged in extra, you know, whatever, double dare economic terrorism by threatening to blow up ships going through the Strait of Hormuz. Thankfully, so far, that appears also to have been a bluff, because it's not totally possible. I mean, it's just not very possible for us to do, considering the fact that if we want a straight close the Strait of Hormuz, we have to actually get close to the Strait of Hormuz, and we aren't capable of doing that. In fact, we're sending the USS George Bush, I think it is, the aircraft carrier, unless I have that name wrong. But we're not able to go through the land by Yemen because we're afraid of the Houthis hitting our ship. So as we speak, I believe it is the USS George Bush is now traveling around the entire continent of Africa to make its way up to the Persian Gulf because we apparently don't feel confident traveling through the Suez Canal. Which again is just, it's everything kind of coming apart. It's everything that we're trying to do failing and all of our threats coming to nothing. And the ultimate result of this is, of course, exactly what we've been telling you since the very beginning. Total economic collapse. Yeah, this is the image of the jets, Pakistan fighter jets actually escorting the negotiators back to Iran because they know that they'll be killed. They know that because they didn't get an agreement, they were likely very high up on an Israeli/American hit list. And so they were actually escorted back home with a swarm of jet fighters. And I saw somebody online say, you know, it's not the jet fighters that are protecting them. It's the fact that the jet fighters are from Pakistan and Pakistan has a nuclear bomb, because what this war against Iran is teaching everybody, Iran in particular, is that you really need a nuclear bomb. And you should really never give it up once you get one. That was the mistake Muammar Gaddafi made. So again, if your goal, as laid out by the Trump administration, is denying Iran a nuclear weapon, everything we're doing is counterproductive to that. If your goal is to better America and make us more unchallenged on the world stage, this is directly contributing to the collapse of that mission. So this is the strange part. I'm not even out of alignment with the stated goals of the Iran war. It's just the Iran war is obviously counterproductive to all of it, to absolutely all of it. And anybody who's paying attention just can recognize this and knows this, and everybody else is just lying about it. That's the only thing I can assume, because how do I know if nobody else does? But it's not just that the negotiations didn't go well for J.D. Vance, even though, according to the Iranian side of things, Iran-U.S. was, quote, inches away from a deal in Pakistan. And then maybe there was a phone call with somebody in Israel, and then everything fell apart. Darn it. Whoopsie-daisy. We were so close, but it just didn't quite happen. So again, it's not even that like J.D. Vance couldn't have gotten it done. It's just he has been given an impossible task. And I can't help but wonder if it's in part to destroy his, you know, political future. Because that is the outcome one way or another. He is being saddled with both the attack on Iran and the failure to stop the attack on Iran. And obviously, he and his media team are trying desperately to counteract that by having lots of articles come out about how J.D. Vance was the only one trying desperately to stop the war in Iran, which may very well have been true. But regardless, he is being saddled with the failures now. But it's not just that. It's the fact that J.D. Vance is an outspoken Catholic and Donald Trump is fighting the Pope. So there's that. And again, I'm not trying to like just fall into the cliches, but reality falls into the cliches. Cliches are cliches for a reason, and it's because they're constantly recognizable in actual life. And the cliche in this case would be that Donald Trump / the American government is the attack dog of Israel and is basically just at their beck and call. And if you look at the last couple of fights Trump has gotten in the last week, Today I get on, I think I went to Drudge or something, and there was a link that was like Trump at Maloney's throat, you know, Trump fighting the prime minister of Italy. And it's like, what the hell is this about? And it's like, Italy's Maloney suspends defense cooperation deal with Israel. Okay. All right. I got it. Trump comes out and says, we're cutting off Spain. We're not going to do any more work with Spain. We hate Spain. And you look at, well, why is he saying that? Oh, because they also canceled their defense agreement with Israel. Okay, it's starting to make sense. Why is he fighting the Pope? Why the hell do you think? Why is he fighting Tucker Carlson and Candace Owens and Alex Jones and Megyn Kelly and Marjorie Taylor Greene? It's all the same answer. They're all Israel's enemies. So again, not to fall into the cliche, but it's like, it's to the point where you can like answer questions like this just on this assumption. I see Trump is fighting Maloney. The first thing I think is she probably did something to Israel. Gee, what do you know? That's exactly right. Trump's not, he's not getting in fights. Like there hasn't been a week of him, you know, going to the mat with Chuck Schumer or anybody on the left. Nobody here in America, not even the Republicans that are trying to pass amnesty or not passing the SAVE Act. He doesn't have very many unkind words for them. Of course, he has unkind words for the challengers of the likes of Lindsey Graham. But it's all for Israel. But it's all, so he's like, literally, it's just, if you want to know why Trump is doing what he's doing, the answer is Israel is instructing him. Israel is giving him treats and he is performing for them. It's very pathetic. It's very sad. It is not for the American interest. It is 100% in the interest of Israel. And it's just absolutely pathetic to see our country being ripped apart at the seams while our president starts fights all over the world and with us in particular over our lack of enthusiasm with committing suicide so Israel can become a world power and a global superstate. So J.D. Vance, again, is sort of caught in between his faith and the president. Pope Leo says he does not fear Trump, citing gospel as he pushes back in feud over the Iran war. In Leo, Trump faces a different kind of papal opponent. And by the way, I'm about to insult the Pope too, so don't get me wrong here. I'm not Catholic, and I think it's weird that a bunch of people in our country have a foreign king, even if he's from Chicago. That's weird too. And I'll get to why the Pope is falling into the same dichotomy everybody else is in just a second, but this is another aspect of J.D. Vance's continual loss this week as he loses over and over. Let's go to clip 32 here. This is Vance talking about the conflict between the Pope and President Trump. Let's watch.
Do you think that when the president says it's hurting him very badly, going catering to the radical left is hurting the Catholic Church, do you agree with the president there?
Well, look, I think the president has the prerogative to set American foreign policy. He's got the prerogative to set American immigration policy. He has to look out for the interests of the United States of America. And that inevitably means that when the Vatican comments on issues of public policy, sometimes there's going to be agreement, of course, and sometimes there's going to be disagreement. I think that's a reasonable thing, Brett. I don't think that it's particularly newsworthy, but I certainly think that in some cases, it would be best for the Vatican to stick to matters of morality, to stick to matters of what's going on in the Catholic Church, and let the President of the United States stick to dictating American public policy. But when they're in conflict, they're in conflict. I don't worry about it too much, Brett. I think it's a natural thing. I'm sure it'll happen in the future, and it's not that big of a deal that it happened in the past.
All right, so, you know, I agree with J.D. Vance there, essentially. I mean, he's right. The Catholic Church is not helping America. Catholic charities have been a major importer of a lot of the illegal immigrants. Israeli Catholic charities fund the immigrants here and collect American taxpayer dollars to give to immigrants, which is especially absurd because they do the same thing in Europe where the vast majority of immigrants are Muslim and Christianity in Europe is already like teetering on the brink, and now almost every day there's a new church that's been burned by a Muslim immigrant somewhere in Europe. I mean, it's just full-on attack there, and yet the Pope says nothing about it. The Pope actually, if they do say anything about it, encourage and basically say it's a moral imperative that you allow yourself to be taken over and conquered. This is not Christian in the slightest. There's nothing Christian about this. It's Christian if somebody really needs help and you're actually helping them. It's not Christian for just some guy to come up to you, lie to you about a trouble that he's in, and then demand your money. You're not being charitable then. You're being a sucker. You're being a fool. There's nothing good or moral about being taken advantage of, right? There's nothing moral about taking advantage of people, and there's nothing moral about being taken advantage of, about being a sucker or a fool who is
thinks you're giving to charity when really you're giving to a thief. There's nothing charitable about that. This is absurd. And at the same time, Pope Leo is performing this ceremony in a mosque or something. Pope Leo places a wreath of flowers and prays for the Algerians who died in the Algerian War of Independence against French colonial rule at this monument in Algiers. We can go ahead and play that video we have of him delivering this giant wreath, which is very interesting because apparently when it comes to Muslim countries, non-white countries, he's in favor of the natives violently throwing out the interlopers. He's in favor of decolonialism when it's white people who actually built the whole country being driven out by the native Africans. But if it's Europeans who don't want Africans there, if it's the native Europeans who don't want to see their countries taken over by colonists, then Pope Leo condemns them and says that they're being evil. So there is a severe disconnect here. There's a double standard that's very hard to ignore. As Harrison Pitts on X puts it, it turns out expelling unwanted foreigners is quote-unquote holy. After all, those expelled were Europeans. Everything Pope Leo condemns as hateful nativism in the West, he applauds as heroic decolonization in the Third World. Let's stop pretending this is in any way based. And of course, when you look at the Algerian Civil War in the first place, the whole thing was ridiculous. When the French showed up there, it was nothing. It was just like a couple runes from like a civilization that had existed 1,000 years before. And then the French came in and built everything. And they built everything. It was a backwater, less than Third World. I mean, it was just nothing. And then the French came in, built it up for like hundreds of years. And then after hundreds of years of building up this country, the natives decide that actually this belongs to us and kicked all the French people out. And that's being celebrated and honored and glorified by the Pope, who goes out of his way to condemn lesser actions in Europe. Like, I was going to say the same thing in Europe, but it's not really the same, is it? It's not really the same. See, the Algerians murdered a bunch of French Catholics. They just like violently purged them and killed a lot of them. It was like very brutal, just sort of endless massacres. In fact, we have a sample here. The largest massacre of the day occurred at El Halal pyrite mining town, where about 130 European and 2,000 Muslims lived and worked together. The mob was composed of hundreds of Muslims, both men and women, who were mostly armed with farming tools, axes, sharpened shovels, or knives, and were led by 25 FLN members. They arrived at around 11 a.m. when most of the Pied Noir men were working in the mine and women and children were at home. A bloody massacre ensued in which European women were raped and disemboweled or decapitated. Children had their throats slit and babies were slammed against walls. Some of the local Muslim inhabitants initially watched without reacting, eventually joined in the excited mob as it massacred Europeans under chants of Allahu Akbar that blended with Algerians, women's ululations. The attack caused the murder of 37 Europeans, mostly women and children. Okay. So that's what the Pope is honoring and glorifying and placing a wreath at the tomb, you know, memorializing that. Meanwhile, if you simply want the government to stop allowing migrants into your country, the Pope condemns you as a hateful bigot, a xenophobe who must be opposed. But hey, bunch of Muslims slaughtering women and children because they're Catholic and French, that's a glorious act of decolonization. So this is the false dichotomy, and it's literally everywhere.
I've been an oilfield for as long as I've been an info warrior, 18 years. And Texan, born and raised, so I know, like, knives, like you do. And I finally broke down and ordered one. I got the neon orange, and I'm blown away. I've had Benchmark knives that are easily $400. Had them for a year, lost them. This thing has the same feel, same quality, same, everything about it. I haven't had a knife stay this sharp in a long time, and I'm, like, horrible with equipment. I'm, like, very abusive with knives at work every day. I'm extremely impressed. I'm very impressed. So anybody out there listening, who knows there's a knife, comes back in stock, get one. You know, any of them. I want to get the ring knife when it comes back out. Other than that, I'll join all the supplements and
Yeah, particularly the pocket knives, the folding knives, the flip knives are super high quality at incredibly low prices. I mean, these same knives sell in stores all day for like $80 or something for like $40. We'll be right back. I'm holding in my hands two compounds that are guaranteed to change your life. T3, pure atomic iodine. Nobody else has it. It's next level. And ultramethylene blue, medical grade methylene blue. These two products together supercharge the mitochondria in the cells, clean out the body, and are game changers. Iodine is essential, meaning you die without it. The UN admits that most people that have cognitive disabilities is because of lack of iodine. You add ultramethylene blue to this, it supercharges everything. Ladies and gentlemen, T3 is now available. DallasTheStore.com, the very best iodine that we know of that exists. There may be better. We'll adopt that if we can. But this is the best for sale we found, and we have the best medical grade ultramethylene blue. Get yours now, right now. If you're a VIP member, for 50% off. Regular customers, 25% off. It funds the InfoWar, but more importantly, it is a game changer. If you don't take my advice and try this, you're insane. All you got to do is try it. You'll be blown away. Take action now. DallasTheStore.com to get T3, now available, and methylene blue at DallasTheStore.com. I'm holding in my hands two compounds that are guaranteed to change your life. T3, pure atomic iodine. Nobody else has it. It's next level. And ultramethylene blue, medical grade methylene blue. These two products together supercharge the mitochondria in the cells, clean out the body, and are game changers. Iodine is essential, meaning you die without it. The UN admits that most people that have cognitive disabilities is because of lack of iodine. You add ultramethylene blue to this, it supercharges everything. Ladies and gentlemen, T3 is now available. DallasTheStore.com, the very best iodine that we know of that exists. There may be better. We'll adopt that if we can. But this is the best for sale we found, and we have the best medical grade ultramethylene blue. Get yours now, right now. If you're a VIP member, for 50% off. Regular customers, 25% off. It funds the InfoWar, but more importantly, it is a game changer. If you don't take my advice and try this, you're insane. All you got to do is try it. You'll be blown away. Take action now. DallasTheStore.com to get T3, now available, and methylene blue at DallasTheStore.com. Our medical grade USP ultramethylene blue, exclusively at DallasTheStore.com, has taken the country by storm. You've seen the rave reviews. All of our guests that have taken it have been blown away. Zen, clarity, focus like a fog has lifted. It's not a stimulant, but it feels like one with no letdown. But the best part is it's so good for your cells, so good for your mitochondria. It's incredible. Now we have it in sealed capsules with organic vitamin C to supercharge it as well. Get a 1 month supply so you can travel with it. Talk to your physicians before you take it because it's very, very powerful. It can interact with some drugs. But after you've done your research, get your ultramethylene blue either in liquid or now in capsules exclusively at thealexjonesstore.com and it funds our operations. And if you subscribe, you can lock in 50% off right now on all future orders and cancel anytime. Take action now at thealexjonesstore.com. Become a subscriber and lock in 50% off on top of the already incredible savings. TheAlexJonesStore.com is the destination of health, liberty, and freedom.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones. Broadcasting live from the UN stronghold, Austin, Texas, you're listening to The Alex Jones Show.
Well, Reverend, Reverend, please come quick. 'Cause I got
something. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, sitting in for Alex Jones today. I'm very happy to welcome our guest, former InfoWars reporter Savannah Hernandez. She's a reporter and political commentator now working with TPUSA, who specializes in on-the-ground coverage of protest rallies and events across America. You can follow her on X at SavSays, S-A-V-S-A-Y-S. And of course, she was attacked while reporting on a protest, an anti-immigration protest over the weekend. Savannah, how are you? It's good to see you, and I'm glad you're not in the hospital or something. It was brutal.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Harrison. I am doing as okay as I can be, given the situation. I am, you know, we're getting through it. I'm happy that I'm back home. I'm not in Minneapolis or Minnesota anymore, thank goodness. It feels like lawless pockets of the United States of America are very much alive and well. And yeah, a pretty jarring experience, Harrison. You and I spoke, you know, a little bit after it happened, and I feel like I'm just trying to, I guess, mentally cope with what happened, which I feel like a threshold has been crossed, because typically in the West and, you know, in American culture, it's basic common knowledge that men do not touch women and children. But, you know, I guess we're just too far gone as a country now, where grown men are pushing down tiny journalists that are unarmed, then not attacking them.
Yeah, it was really, I mean, all of it was shocking. The way you were attacked was shocking. Of course, the fact that you weren't there trying to get interviews, you weren't there, because there is a difference. If somebody goes in, you're going into a crowd that you know is hostile and you're kind of trying to get a reaction, and people do that, and if they get hit, it's not good. You're not supposed to do violence, obviously, but there's a certain amount of like, okay, they were expecting that. You were there by yourself, simply filming there as a journalist, capturing footage on the ground, and I guess people recognized you from TPUSA and decided to target you for that. Can you talk a little bit about just when you realized that they had identified you and how this all unfolded?
Sure. So basically, there is a man named William Scott Kelly, and he is the same Minneapolis protester that was arrested a couple months back for storming the church in Minneapolis. Remember the storming that led to children crying in terror because they were simply trying to worship Jesus Christ on a Sunday morning, and then these violent anti-ICE protesters went and mobbed the church and shut it down. He was a part of that. He was arrested for that. He is the person that came up to me and identified me on the ground, and he is the person that initially started screaming at me and started the mob, which formed around me. When I say started, I mean he was basically attracting all of the people by screaming at me that I work with Turning Point USA and that I was at this event. Now, I tried to tell people immediately and basically just defuse the situation by stating that I was not there to conduct interviews. I was simply observing. I even made a point to go stand next to the other streamers, right, who had their press vests on that clearly said press. I had my own press badge out, but I was like, let me just make sure that I'm standing with the press so that everybody, you know, can clearly identify that I am a member of the press. At one point, I had gotten some footage. Again, this was observational journalism, point and shoot, and then write a very basic summary of what is going on the ground. I went to the fence area on the public sidewalk to go and, you know, scrub through my footage and post it. And at that point, that's when William Kelly comes up to me, starts making a scene. At this point, a mob is forming, and it was a family. This was a family affair, Harrison.
Yeah.
Chris, Diana, and Paige Ostrushko, who all took turns violently assaulting me for simply standing on a public street. That's it. That was my crime, existing in the United States of America and standing on a public street. Now, the mom was the first one who came up to me. She started shoving me. She started very violently screaming in my face. She decided that I hate women and that I am, you know, a racist, bigot, Nazi, like pick whatever name you want in your head. And that was kind of the energy she was putting out at me. And this is the labels that she had toward me. So she's being very aggressive. She's pushing me. She's shoving me. She's trying to get in my face. I'm trying to defuse the situation. Her husband comes up behind me, body checks me. Keep in mind, this is like a 250-pound man who's much bigger than me, Harrison, body checks me, screams in my ear. I try to walk away. The daughter comes up to me, starts blowing a whistle in my ear, 1 inch away from my ear. Alternate footage has come out, and it has shown that Chris told his own daughter, instructed his own child to go up to me and blow the whistle in my effing ear. He is quoted on camera saying this, so this was a premeditated attack. They planned this attack, they coordinated it, they orchestrated it, and then they had the audacity to say that I was the aggressor and that I was the person who went to agitate. Now, again, there are multiple angles of this. There were multiple live streamers there. This assault was so violent that even the left wing had to come out and say, yeah, we probably shouldn't touch women. That's a bridge too far. Yeah, that was a bad look. But, you know, I'm truly baffled by this because, you know, I'm familiar with the left wing, Harrison. I'm familiar with how violent they are. And it's why I made a point not to even try to speak to anybody, but merely observe. But in 2026, it doesn't matter. For merely existing on a public sidewalk, I was brutally assaulted multiple times. I had a whistle blown in my face. I had sex toys thrown in my face. I was pushed to the ground, shoved to the ground by a 250-pound man while my back was turned away and I was trying to leave the situation. It was insane, Harrison, to live through the rewriting of a narrative in live time, right? This woman, this father instructs his daughter to go up to me to assault me. She begins doing it. I'm trying to walk out. I have my hand up like this, like, give me my personal space. Because my hand touched her, she swings on me. After she attacks me, her mom comes up and says, "You touched my daughter." Her mom tries to swing on me. And then the dad comes up and then pushes me to the ground. Because after his daughter attacked me and I had the audacity to try to walk away, that was somehow an assault on their kid. So anyways, sorry to take over here.
No, the whole thing is just completely insane. But you touched on a lot of things that I wanted to bring up as well, because it wasn't even necessarily like they recognized you and knew of your work and didn't like you. It was because you worked for TPUSA, which is really shocking. I mean, we're, you know, less than a year, what, 8 months away from Charlie Kirk's assassination. And the result of that has been more hatred of TPUSA and more radicalization of the left. I mean, it's insane. TPUSA is not a radical outlet. It is, you know, no offense, it's like, you know, I don't want to call it normie because it's right wing. It's good. I like TPUSA. But the left has seen their successful assassination of Charlie Kirk as like a green light. Like, we can attack these people now. It's really sick.
Yeah, Harrison, this isn't the first time, by the way, that I've been on the ground simply doing the point and shoot journalism, that people have looked at my press badge, seen that I work with Turning Point USA and have made a point to come up to me, to harass me, to threaten me, to make me feel uncomfortable, to essentially highlight how Charlie's death was justified. And now, you know, this is kind of the apex of that, me just being assaulted for simply being on the ground. I was speaking to some of my other journalist friends as well who've been in Minneapolis, and they were like, yeah, Minneapolis is on the same level, if not worse, than Portland. Now, if people don't remember what Portland in 2020 was like, people were getting shot and killed.
Right.
When Antifa found out that they were right wing or conservative. Yep. And I have a lot of anger, Harrison. I'm grateful because both the DOJ and DHS now have active investigations into potential charges. The state, or at least the sheriff's department in Minneapolis, said that they are recommending charges. I am going to do everything that I can to make sure that charges are brought forth against these people, and we will be using other avenues as well to hold them accountable personally on my end. But
well, and I believe, tell me if I'm wrong, I believe the daughter was arrested, and when the police went to arrest her, her boyfriend like started fighting the cops. He got arrested. He's an illegal immigrant. So, and apparently the woman is now, you know, out on bail, but apparently she was arrested and charged. But that was my next question, because it seems like you have the premeditation aspect. We'll play the video, because I know you don't have very long. We have to say goodbye to you in just a second, but once you leave, we'll play the video that shows they planned this out. Go blow the, you know, whistle in her ears. That's assault by itself. So it's like premeditated. They're insulting you and your race. I mean, that would be hate crime charges, obviously attack on a journalist.
And my religion, Harrison, and my religion.
So it's like, this isn't just a, you know, if they get away with like, oh, assault and battery, like, no, this needs every charge we can throw at them. How confident are you that these people will have justice rendered to them?
I'm going to do everything in my power, but I need the federal government to step in and make sure that they bring charges forth. I sat in front of the president of the United States last October at an Antifa roundtable to talk about this exact same thing. I looked Pam Bondi in her face and I said, please use the full force of the DOJ to come after these people and lay down the law. Because for this isn't just about me, Harrison. Okay, I'm one of multiple journalists who have been brutally assaulted at this point, who have had my First Amendment rights trampled over. But this is not just about me. It's about all of us. It's about sending a strong message that this is a country of law and order, and we need to abide by basic law and order. We should not be a country that is okay with watching a 250-pound man slam a young woman to the ground. So I want justice to be served, and I hope and pray that every federal agency involved is able to bring forward charges and that there is follow through on this. Again, they have been very responsive, which has been incredible. We need to see the follow through, because this is not about me. This is about every single journalist who has been attacked, because at this point, Harrison, it's not even just a right wing issue. You also have the left wing. It doesn't matter, you know, what side of the political aisle that you are on. If you go and try to film these people, they are criminals. They are committing criminal acts and they do not like being filmed doing it. And that is why they have used violence for almost a decade at this point. No, it has been. It's been over a decade at this point since Donald Trump came down that golden escalator escalator. This has been the scene and it needs to stop.
Yep. 100%. And of course, there's the guy right next to you. That's the William Kelly guy who actually should be in jail right now because of the terrorism he committed against the church. And so I saw Harmeet Dhillon on X going, we are on it. And it's like, you were supposed to be on it back then. You were supposed to be on it 6 months ago when these people committed federal crimes, and yet they're out doing it again. So tell me that you're on it. Fine. But, you know, we'd like to see some results. I know you got to go. Thank you so much for giving us some of your time. I know this is difficult for you to talk about. How can people support you, and how can people, you know, keep up with this story that as you, you know, pursue justice? How can people find you?
Please go follow me on X at Sav Says. Go follow me on YouTube at Sav Says as well. I will be, like I said, seeing these cases through, and I will make sure that the public is fully aware of, you know, how this ends, but I will be following through with it. So go follow me there, and I will be posting updates. Thank you for having me, Harrison.
Thank you very much, Savannah. And we're glad you're safe. It's always harrowing seeing an attack like that, but especially when it's somebody you know. And, you know, she didn't have security. Since then, I've had like a ton of people call me and be like, can I get Sav's contact? We want to volunteer security. Stuart Rhodes is like, we will have Oath Keepers surrounding her in a phalanx. You just give me the word. And obviously seeing that video, I mean, you're not a human being if you don't start seeing red and, wanting the justice system to be a little bit more brutal and efficient than it currently is right now. Because as she points out, this is not what we do, but it's becoming what we do. We are becoming a culture of mercilessness and savagery and dog eat dog, just might is right mentality. And it's, you know what humanity spent 2,000 years fighting and sacrificing our way out of? We're just devolving back into it because the other option is just be kind of mean to bad people. Not even mean, just like lay down the law and just throw the criminals in prison and not be sorry about it. That's literally all we have to do, and everything would be fine. We seem incapable of doing that. But I say, even again, you know, the glimmer of hope is that you see the left-wing streamers that were there with Savannah. So as she said, she was kind of standing around other streamers that were there. Most of them were leftist. Now, when Savannah gets attacked and thrown against the fence, you can see the William Kelly scumbag domestic terrorist. I'll leave it there. You know, he's standing right there, and instead of defending her, he, like, moves out of the way so she can keep being attacked. Some of the guys, to their credit, see a woman get attacked and immediately have the instinct to turn around and block the attacker. Thank God there's still some remnant of classic American mentality going on, which might give you a little bit of hope. But then you want to ask these people, like, you get that this is your side, right? Like, this is the left. This is not out of character of the left. This is not, oh, some crazy extremist that you can't, you know, blame this on his ideology. No, this is y'all. No, this is what you believe. Now, the fact that that this family is quote unquote Iranian-Ukrainian is just sort of another layer of, I don't know, the simulation winking at us or something. But this is the left. This is who you people are. This is what you support. And so when you're faced with it directly, some of these leftist streamers, they still have that, you know, remnant in their lizard brain, the instinct to be outraged and infuriated and experience the righteous indignation at a 250-pound goblinoid attacking a young woman. They still have that instinct. And the question is, like, where is it the rest of the time? Okay, but where is it the rest of the time? You are here actually protesting against ICE, whose entire job is protecting innocent people from the ravages of psychotics like the ones you're aligned with. So where's the consistency? Where's that protector instinct when it actually matters and on the political realm? Not that it doesn't actually matter with Savannah, but where is that instinct when it comes to the nation at large? I don't know. I don't get it. But it's like that glimmer of hope that's like, okay, they're not totally brainwashed. Some of them aren't. People like that Kelly guy, people like the family themselves, like, okay, they're a lost cause. They just need to be decommissioned. They just need to be kept out of any influence whatsoever and probably locked away for their own good, if not deported to the ocean. Like, whatever. We don't need them. We don't like them. We don't want them. But there are some people that think they're on the left, think that being a moral, good person, having that instinct to protect means that you should go on the left. How are you falling for this? Because this is the ultimate trick of the left, is they hijack the best instincts of people. They hijack the good things that we want to preserve, the instinct to protect, is then wielded against them as you're told, oh, you have to protect the endless flow of adult men into Europe. That is what is, you know, loving and good. It's absurd and it's backwards. So it's kind of hard to wrap your mind around. Let's go to that video just to show people what we're talking about here. Again, the absurdity and the headline says it all. Far left anti-ICE extremist now plays victim after brutal assault on TPUSA reporter Savannah Hernandez. It's one of these situations where they know they're lying, they know we know they're lying, and yet they're lying. And typically that sort of phrase is attributed to people at the top, but no, it's trickled down. No, they get it too. And I've talked about this for a long time. I remember in 2016, in the run-up to the Donald Trump election, there was a false flag attack against a church where there was like a swastika and I think some slurs about gay people written on a church. And it turned out it was the gay choir director of the church, and he's being interviewed, and they're like, why did you do this? And he's like, well, it was a false flag. I did a false flag because I wanted people to understand the threat that we are under with Trump. Now, if you really like wrap your mind around what that is saying, like they're imagining a threat. They're mad that we aren't also imagining the non-existent threat. So then they do the threat. They do the thing that they're warning about to prove us wrong that we weren't concerned about it. I mean, on its own, it's shocking that anybody would have the ability to think this way and not go insane. But really, the important thing about this, in my mind, was that people understand now. You don't need a massive conspiracy to pull off a false flag. Typically, the way it would go was that you would have these plans in place. You'd have people in different positions all playing their role. You'd have the people in the media. Okay, here's what we're going to do. Here's how you spin it. Here's who you blame it on. And you have this, you know, smoky rooms and this collaboration taking place. It's not really necessary anymore. Now, the left knows I can lie and the media will run with it. I can attack Republicans, say they attacked me, and the media will report my story as fact. They just know that. They know that's the case, and so they act like that's the case. So when they're the ones complaining about the post-truth world and the damage that the Trump administration has done to trust in this country, they have fully enveloped themselves in this mindset of whoever can lie the best wins, whoever can just lie continuously no matter how obvious it is they're lying. That's the way you succeed. See, we used to, or theoretically had, a society where you were rewarded for telling the truth. Even if it was a bad thing, you told the truth because it was the right thing to do. And you recognize that, like, everybody's lying all the time. There's no way we can solve any problem ever because we can't even identify the problem. We certainly can't identify the solution. You try to make a solution, the solution ends up just filling the pockets of the person that caused the problem in the first place. This is the situation that we're in because of this incremental acceptance of the lies, acceptance of the false flags, acceptance of the just total inverted interpretation of world events. It's absolutely insane. And as Americans, we just shouldn't allow this to be the case, but obviously there is this side. Again, I don't even know if left and right is the right designation, but whatever these sides are, in my opinion, there are two sides. There's Savannah Hernandez and the people who were standing around her protecting her, and there were the psychotics protesting ICE and attacking her. Those are the two sides. Define it however you want. If you believe that a reporter deserves to be viciously attacked for merely having different opinions than you, you're not on our team. You're not American, so you shouldn't even pretend to be. If, however, you believe in free speech, you believe in the right of even those you hate to speak freely, then you're on our team. And if you'll protect innocent women from psychotic goblins, then you're on our team. This is the real division here. At the end of the day, let's go to this video quickly and then We'll finish out the segment, but here's these attackers pre-planning, plotting their attack to assault Savannah Hernandez, even if they never touched her. Blowing a whistle full volume in somebody's ear to deafen them is obviously assault, as it can cause permanent damage and hearing loss. Let's watch.
Don't write up.
Where's your
phone? Where's the whistle? It's in the car. Just the whistle right there. right in her ear.
Whistle in her ear.
You are doing it back. You're going right in her fucking ear.
So again, you just have this crowd, this mob surrounding Savannah there. They don't realize they're in front of a camera that's streaming as they are literally plotting their attack right there. So that's pre-planning. You know, that means you can't say, oh, this is the heat of the moment or whatever you'd want to argue in court. This is pre-planning. And then I would wonder if they, there's just so many ways to go after these people. And if these people, basically if these people don't go to jail for years, we're going to have a major problem. And it's sort of the final litmus test for the Trump administration. Maybe not the final one, but like the Trump administration is hanging on by a thread. They're collapsing in the polls across the board. And almost all of it is because the Iran war is happening while American interests and domestic American issues are going totally unaddressed. One of the primary ones being the insanity, the domestic terrorism, the violence of the left, as people who storm into church and terrorize children are let out to go do this again, like that guy William Kelly. That's one of the biggest issues with the Trump administration, and it proves to all of us that had big hopes for the Trump administration, they're not serious about correcting things, because you need to correct this almost first and foremost. Correct this, and then you can do the deportations without a lot of interference, right? Do this, and then we can go out and cover stuff and have free speech and hold protests and not have to worry about being assassinated during it. This is a problem, if solved, could solve a bunch of other problems, but they're not doing that. So if the Trump administration felt like winning the midterms, if they had any inclination whatsoever to preserve the Republican Party as a political entity, then they would be pouring all of their effort into this, and they would be making a giant public show about just how effective and, you know, zero tolerance their position on leftist violence is. So that's up to them. I got to tell you, folks, thealexjonesstore.com, it's the only way that we get funds. And I want you to pay attention, because a lot of times we have a lot of sales. Sales are constantly starting and ending. You hear the term last chance a lot, because it'll be like, oh, the sale's about to end. It's your last chance to get it. It's your last chance to get the raffle for the car. Folks, it might be your last chance ever to get InfoWars branded material. Once InfoWars goes down, we cannot sell anything with InfoWars logo on it. So now is your actual last chance ever to get InfoWars branded material at thealexjonesstore.com, thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison, to let them know who sent you. Second hour begins on the other side.
I know you're the big health guy. You're way better shape than I am. Don't kick my ass. I've seen you working out with Liver King. You say you've taken methylene before. I want you to take our medical grade, the kickstarting must kick in. So good for your body. I'd like you to drink this, Jay. And you said earlier, what? I appreciate it. I want to get your true review. It doesn't work? Tell me. Here it is, brother.
Cheers.
Looks just like the stuff from Doom, the water of life. He's drinking the juice of a strangled, drowned sandworm right now. Baron Harkonnen is not happy. We're going to see what happens.
20 minutes later.
I feel like my brain is clearer and working faster. It feels like my brain and my energy have had the accelerator hit on them. I felt it in my brain and my energy.
Well,
I like it. I'm going to get me some before I leave.
We're going to give you a couple bottles of it, bro. We love it. It's amazing. Get yours now. TheAlexJonesStore.com. I am making this historic announcement on Friday, December 12, 2025. The future of InfoWars hangs in the balance. It is in your hands. They're having a state auction in January next year in about a month, but we don't even have the money for payroll or for satellites or for bandwidth. We've got this next shot to survive, but if we don't get the funds in, we shut down. So we're selling 3 emergency limited edition posters at InfoWarsStore.com right now that are critical to us staying on the air. I want to encourage you to go now to get I Have Not Yet Begun to Fight, John Paul Jones poster, and 2 others, Make No Peace with Evil and Defend the West, Iconic Crusades. Go now to InfoWarsStore.com to get 1 or more of these iconic posters, limited edition. We cannot do it without you. I have fired the bat signal. Take action now if you want to stand with us in this fight at InfoWarsStore.com, and I salute you for your support.
If you are
receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the second hour of the Alex Jones Show for this Tuesday, the 14th of April broadcast. I'll be joined shortly by Michael Yawn, but I want to go to a video here because it's interesting. It's an interesting example of an awakening occurring. It's a woman who worked for Now This News for years that suddenly woke up during COVID. And I always love hearing these stories because to me, it's like if you haven't woken up already, I don't know if anything can wake you up. But a lot of people woke up during COVID and it was a beautiful thing. And this is what we're trying to manifest in minds the world over, this awakening, this realization that they may be believing a whole bunch of lies. Let's watch.
So when does this small hint of doubt or you slipping something at like a drunk wine night turn into you this complete breakup?
So the timeline is that I was at Now This from 2015 to 2021. And so I was there through the COVID stuff too. And so, and I was visible. I was an on-camera person the whole time I was there. So the whole world shut down at the peak of COVID. It was something like 17%. We saw a 17% reduction in our carbon emissions, the peak of COVID. Mm-hmm. So that's like just like those 2 weeks. Over the year, it ends up being something like 5% reduction. And I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute. The climate movement wants 100% reduction in our carbon emissions. What is it going to expect of our society?
Yeah, we're like, literally locked in our homes and not doing anything.
And we still have carbon emissions. And so that was the first moment where I go, hold on. I don't know if I want to live in a world where we have zero carbon emissions because I'm kind of depressed right now at home. This sucks and we have no freedoms. And so what does the climate movement, if you take it to its logical conclusion, it's not going to be no big deal. Like it's going to require people to give up their freedoms to like lower carbon emissions. And so that was one thing. And then the other thing was I was very anti-plastic and all of a sudden like the PPEs everywhere, the masks, the plastic barriers between every table at a restaurant and when you're checking out your food at the grocery store. And I'm like, wait a minute. I've been sweating about a single-use plastic straw for the last 5 years. And now we've proliferated more plastic in the last few months than I've seen in my lifetime. And also looking around, we seem like we're fine. It looks like our society was able to absorb that plastic and the world has not ended. It's like, we don't have time for nuance. We just have to push for the most extreme narrative because this is a fire alarm situation and the planet is going to be destroyed. So like, we don't have time to think about the downsides of solar and wind. Like we have to just keep pushing forward because this is existential. And so I subscribed to that where I'm like, you know, this is an existential threat and we don't have time to like look at the details. Like, you know, like, we just have to get people to care, and to be afraid. And because if they're afraid, they're going to change their habits. When I was in the climate movement, I got my identity from being a good person and from being on the right side of history. And so I identified with that. And so good people don't question the climate movement. You know, good people don't listen to fossil fuel shills or defend fossil fuels. Good people don't question the climate narrative. And so this identity of being good, and I talked a little bit about this idea of atoning, right? Because everyone's obsessed with the white privilege and everything. And I'm realizing like, oh my gosh, I'm an oppressor by being a white woman and from America. And so I need to atone for my sins by pushing and being part of this movement. And that is what makes me good. And so if I'm going to leave this, I'm no longer going to be seen as good and I'm no longer a good person. So who am I? And then that's when you have to start doing the work of building up yourself.
Absolutely fascinating. It hits different when it comes from one of them, doesn't it? I mean, we could make those arguments till we're blue in the face. It goes in one ear and out the other. But that is just absolutely fascinating. It's everything that we say. Her realizing, wait, this doesn't make me a good person. Wait, I'm atoning for something I didn't do? None of it makes any sense. But the thing that you have to break out of is that assertion that that being good means being a part of this leftist nonsense. You've been tricked. You've been fooled. They've taken your goodness and warped it and turned it against you. The good thing to do now, the only thing to do now, is realize that they're the bad guys and develop a comprehensive worldview that makes that true. Luckily, you don't have to come up with one yourself. We've been preaching it for the last 30 years here at InfoWars. It's about centering humanity, centering our potential as a species and recognizing all these limitations are not for our good. They're the evil little scum that are trying to hold us down. And they're succeeding because a lot of really good, powerful people believe them and go along with it. It's totally absurd. What a powerful clip. Michael Yon joins me on the other side, folks. Don't go anywhere. What's this? Oh, I've got Power Plan. Oh, what's this? I've got Methyl Drive, the two ingredients in the Power Drive bundle, which is available at thealexjonesstore.com. Take them. Pure power, pure energy, raise testosterone, improve mitochondrial function, methylation genes in enzymatic processes throughout the body. Pairs perfectly, absolutely perfectly with Methylene Blue. These are the two products made to work in conjunction together with Methylene Blue. I made them, I developed them, high quality mineral blends, methylation blends, adaptogenic herbs, functional mushrooms, and the CoQ10, the PQQ. What you want for metabolic health and mitochondrial function. I want you to win today. I want you to succeed. Take out the enemy. Choose freedom.
Unveiling the truth they don't want you to see. This is the Alex Jones Show.
How can we reduce the demand? Because, of course, the least expensive energy is the energy that is not used. We should reduce demand while fully respecting the free choice of consumers. So we are looking at energy efficiency levers such as renovation of buildings or the renewal of equipment in industrial operations. These are some measures, but there are also other measures that we will present or will be the core of the presentation of the communication next week on the table of the leaders. So far for the...
So there's the European Commissioner, or EU Commissioner, Ursula von der Leyen, saying that the best use of energy is no use at all. It would be very efficient if you were all dead. You know, the way to save money on food is to not eat, and the way we save the air is not breathe. If you were all in the ground, the earth would be thriving. It's incredible stuff, and of course, it's not a coincidence that, oopsie daisy, we go to war with Iran, and it looks like we have to do another lockdown, another climate change style, you know, scandal emergency. And it's all just as predictable as it is fraudulent. Here to talk about all of this, including the closing of the Strait of Hormuz, is Michael Yon. You can follow him on X at Michael_Yon. That's Y-O-N. MichaelYon.com, MichaelYon.locals.com as well. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you. And speaking of Ursula, I believe her pony was killed by a wolf 2 or 3 years ago. Was it? Yeah, 2 or 3 years ago. Remember that they're weaponizing wolves in Europe. That's one of the weapons that they're using to reduce the, you know, cause problems for the European farmers. You could probably find it online, but one of those wolves that, you know, they pretend like these wolves have, you know, just always, you know, I speak German and I can read German. So whenever this happens with a wolf in Germany, I read their newspapers and they're, you know, they're always blaming the farmers. One farmer in Netherlands, his name's Jordan van der Man is his name. He goes, what are these wolves? They say they're indigenous here. Did these wolves? My grandfather built this polder. You know what I mean? The polder, that's where they drain the water. And he goes, what were they? Sea wolves killing seahorses?
That really happen? Ursula von der Leyen had a pony eaten by a wolf?
I think it was killed by a wolf, and I think they were taking DNA. Can you find it online? I mean, I believe that was 2 or 3 years ago. I've been watching the wolf thing for a while.
That sounds like an omen to me.
Wolves and beavers, and
I'm gonna add that to my list of European omens, because there's the black and white horse covered in blood running through the UK. It's like I think the nature of Europe is desperately crying out, and none of us are listening. I had no idea about that. I mean, if you look into Ursula von der Leyen, I mean, she is like the quintessential, like, you know, European elite globalist. I mean, it comes from the wealthiest families you can imagine. These two German aristocracy families joining, and she's the, you know, the premier example of them, and she's just systematically destroying Europe. What is wrong with the European leadership, Michael?
Just woke. I mean, really gone. But it's been, well, I think they were never not like that. You know, actually, those upper echelons have always been very super elitist. There she is. Did that horse get eaten by the pony? I mean, did that pony get eaten by the wolf? You know? Oh, my gosh. I was talking with one Dutch lady, by the way, who was taking DNA samples of all these. There it is. Yeah,
Ursula van der Leyen warms to wolf coals after losing her pony. Okay. Interesting.
Oh, my goodness. And another German lady, she was on her electric bike, and she said some wolves were trying to get her, almost got her, but she outran them with her electric bike, apparently was quite fast. I mean, these wolves are serious. They're weaponized. Anyway, I could talk for hours about the wolves. I've looked into that quite a lot. But when it comes to – that's just one of the weapons of many. You know, when you go into a war, there's so many weapons being used. Nobody even knows how many weapons are being used, even the people in the war. But wolves are one of the weapons. Beavers are another one, you know, to – flood lands, that people live on, that sort of thing. So there's so many, like the screw worms and, you know, that we predicted what 4 or 5 years ago would start making a comeback, and they have, right?
Yep.
Actually. And so that's entomological warfare. You see the ticks with Lyme disease and that sort of thing. Anyway, but when it comes to the big stuff, energy, right? If you really want to cause famine, you know, as you recall, probably we've talked a couple times, you and I, about how we successfully predicted Nord Stream would be cut. My wife Masako and I, we were at BASF a couple of times before Nord Stream was cut. The last time we were at BASF was 14 days before Nord Stream was cut. And we were there specifically because we thought Nord Stream would be cut, and BASF would be, you know, something you would want to target if you're trying to create famines. In fact, I just put on X tonight. I wouldn't doubt that we'll see sabotage at BASF. In any case, Nord Stream did get cut just as we predicted, and Groningen gas field also got cut just as we predicted, and so many other things. The reason that we're getting these things right is we just do what Alex Jones said he does. He just reads what they say they're going to do, and then we just go out there and audit. I mean, it's pretty simple in its essence. I mean, it does take a lot of study. It's not like you can just read a couple articles and know what they're going to do. It's not that simple. You do have to study a lot. And then we physically go and we look at places. And then at over time, that's why I never saw them saying that we're going to close the Strait of Hormuz. I never saw them say that. I'm just studying what they're doing, what their capabilities are. And at some point I'm like, you know what? I'll bet Zionist forces, let's say that's a combination of U.S. and Israel and that MENA structure, I'll bet you they're going to close Strait of Hormuz and blame Iran. And then, you know, and I kept saying that in interviews and publishing it, and now they've done it yesterday. You know, even when I'm confident that this is, you know, the analysis is good, you're still a little surprised when it comes true, you know? And of course, I think that we have to keep a close eye on Panama. I think Panama Canal at some point will be interrupted. You saw the fire recently under the bridge, the Bridge of the Americas. There it is. Was that actually video from the Bridge of the Americas?
That was a Ukraine bridge, but it just goes to show you that all over the world, there are these attacks on infrastructure in general, but energy infrastructure in particular. And you combine that with the Greta Thunberg, you know, climate change agenda. It's like, well, one's just the more efficient method. And, you know, you can either shut it down by voting for it and, you know, all cheering while you collapse the nuclear cooling tower, or you can strike it with an airstrike. It's like, we're doing the same thing. So really what I find is makes it easy for me to predict things. I'm sure it's the same with you, is you have to know their motive. You have to know what they actually want and what they're going for. If you don't know, if you think we're actually trying to win a war against Iran to stop their nuclear, that's not what it's about. It's about continuing the operation they've been in, different manifestations. COVID was obviously one of them, of locking down the world and sort of getting us used to a one world government with arbitrary restrictions run by corporations. I mean, once you know that's the plan, everything else kind of makes sense, right?
Yeah, I mean, you just said the golden key right there, knowing their motive, right? And then, from there, knowing their motive, we know that one of their motives in service to the larger grand strategy picture is depopulation.
Right.
And one of the things that they're using for depopulation is just famine, like massive famines. So then working back from there, close Strait of Hormuz, close Panama Canal, close Suez, close the Turkish Straits, you know, or let's say Bosphorus, close Danish Straits. We were just up there looking at that. Close Malacca, Singapore Strait, obviously Suez, Bab el-Mandeb. Close those things. Close maybe Hamburg. We were just up there looking at that. Close that's the biggest harbor in Germany, Hamburg. It's the third biggest in Europe. Close Antwerp and Rotterdam. And a few other things, before you know it, you'll have, you know, they've been destroying these fertilizer plants and, you know, culling chickens and all sorts of things, destroying fishing boats, and it goes on and on. These things are additive pressures. There's no thing in particular. Actually, I think that there's no thing in particular that puts us in famine, but because I think we've proven to be, I think that they thought that we would probably go into famine during the actual pandemic lockdowns, right?
Right.
Or after that, maybe within a year or so. But it didn't happen, actually. I think that that was actually a goal at that time, but we were more resilient. The system was more resilient. It's a very robust system. But they kept working on it and working on it and coming back with a bigger plan now and obviously cutting down. You see what they're doing in the Gulf states. They're destroying the synthetic countries, the 1922 countries, those countries – you know, like Kuwait, Qatar, Bahrain, Oman, Saudi Arabia, UAE, and you know, they're closing those, they're destroying those countries. And Israel is being destroyed as well. A lot of people don't get that. Maybe 1% see that part of it. But I wouldn't be surprised, for instance, in Iraq to see Mosul Dam be destroyed. Oh. I first wrote about that maybe 20 years ago, actually, Mosul Dam. Because there's when you look at the causes of war, the reasons for war, let's say, are routes, resources, and ideology. Routes, resources, and ideology. And all three of those are in sharp relief on this one. And keep in mind, a lot of these countries are synthetic, like Panama. We created Panama in 1903 to make the Panama Canal. The British created the GCC countries, you know, those I just named, like Kuwait and Oman and Saudi Arabia. They created those in 1922, and serviced the routes and resources in the Gulf area. And 1948, Israel was created for the same reason. Israel to gain control of the Suez Canal and some other issues there. So that's actually two countries related to canals. That would be Israel and Panama, created largely for canals, right?
Right.
And so they want to build the Ben Gurion Canal through Israel, which I think was probably related to the ever given blockage of the Suez in recent years. But bottom line is, I think you're going to see, I would not be surprised if actually to see BASF at Ludwigshafen, Germany, and other places get attacked. I wouldn't be surprised to see that at all. Because they're clearly depopulating Europe in general and the population, and the general population of planet Earth. And so they will take out as much of this energy infrastructure. They're not just turning it off, like Groningen gas field in Netherlands, the biggest gas field in Europe, and just turn off the valves and that sort of thing. They you know, damage the architecture a great deal. You can't just turn it back on again. Same with Nord Stream. They didn't hit it with a software attack or that sort of thing that you could, you know, unscrew it and get it going again. They blew it up and flooded the pipes, right?
Right.
So, I mean, this is so they're actually destroying, you know, or the Germans destroying that nuclear plant some months ago in Bavaria. You know, they invited the public to come watch them blow up the cooling towers.
I was going to say, and they built it like 2 years before. It was worth tens of billions of dollars. I mean, it's suicidally stupid what they're doing. And you brought something really interesting at the end there. I've all this other stuff I want to ask you about, but you just mentioned, you said it was more than a cyber attack, or it was more than, you know, a computer hacking attack. But I was actually just having this conversation with some of the crew last night, because we were talking about what would be the most, you know, predictable, you know, if we were predicting what the big false flag attack would be, we were saying it'll probably be against energy infrastructure here in America. And probably the easiest and best way to do it would be a cyber attack. And we know that a lot of, you know, the lockstep document that a lot of people point to, the Rockefeller document that seems to have predicted or planned COVID and the lockdowns there. The section right after lockdown is hack attack, and it talks about attacks against infrastructure. What do you think the likelihood is that the attacks on infrastructure and energy infrastructure in particular that's taking place in the Middle East right now, what's the likelihood that that comes to America? And if it does come to America, what form do you think it will take?
Oh, extremely high, Harrison. What form will it take? Well, if we look at the form that they're doing of these other attacks, they're final attacks. I mean, like, they really took out Nord Stream. They really took out that nuclear plant that you were just talking about. I mean, they destroyed it, right?
Yeah.
And some of the coal-fired plants in the United States, they blow them up. And so likewise with a lot of the water infrastructure in Europe, there's actually a website that tracks this in English. They're destroying water infrastructure all over Europe. And so what form would it take, the destruction of the U.S. grid? Well, they could do software attacks, but I think you'll probably see physical attacks as well,
yeah.
Right? And you know, they will have mapped out the critical nodes. They'll know, you know, which places to take out that are hardest to, you know, to recover and go for it. And those power plants are obviously, you know, key places, as you can imagine. And likewise, you know, I've been suspicious of a lot of the things that's happened. I'm in Japan right now, like Fukushima. You go up to Fukushima and you can see there's radiation monitors by the side of the road, like almost like electronic, check your speed, but it's telling you how many, what the radiation, you know, wow. And you can see it fluctuating as you're driving. Yeah. I think it's there to scare people out of Fukushima is my guess, but we went up there actually to a large, vaccine, quote unquote, a factory that they're making up in Fukushima. It's huge. I mean, I published on it about 2 years ago. Yeah. 2.5 years ago, maybe. But I mean, you know, it's a full spectrum war that's going on, whether it's pharma, whether it's, you know, spraying the skies or entomological with bugs or opening the borders. The border invasions are far from over. I mean, you're going to, you know,
they're ramping up in places like Spain.
Still in place. Yeah, Spain's being, and it's the likely suspects doing it. The same ones that have always been doing it. The NGOs the same NGOs, right? They have not been addressed. If the powers that be wanted to stop this, it would be a simple matter. You'd take out those NGOs, which would probably take, you know, about half a day, and then those would be done.
Hell, you could just stop actively funding the NGOs and they'll go away in about a day. It's right. Easy. You know, you don't even have to have a law to stop them. Just stop actively giving them money.
Right.
I love that you brought up Fukushima. It's funny. Coincidental. I just said on X, somebody asked, what's your favorite conspiracy theory? My favorite conspiracy theory, favorite in that it's, you know, people don't know it, but it's fascinating. Fukushima was built by, it's the only reactor in Japan that was built by an American company that has ties to the CIA. It was built on a fault line. It was almost, seems like it was set up to fail. At the time, there were a lot of questions about whether there was an earthquake machine at work creating this on purpose. And the ultimate result of that was that, what's-her-name got elected in Germany. At the time, there was a big election in Germany, and the big question about the election was, do we do nuclear energy or, you know, fossil fuels? And nuclear energy was winning, and they were going to win until the Fukushima thing happened. Germany decides, oh, nuclear energy isn't worth it, and they elect, I'm blanking, not Ursula von der Leyen, who's the German chancellor that opened the door and let all the migrants in. She got elected because Fukushima went down. So it's like, you really look at this from a bird's eye view, and it's like, are all of these things tied in together? Is this all a push that's been going on for several decades to demonize cheap, effective energy, to poison the sea so we can't get natural foods? We have to do that, mechanically or industrially as well. Flood Germany with migrants, destroy the German state, then do the climate change agenda. It's like all of these things all seem to be pushing towards the same direction. Whether it was an intended or not, I guess we can debate, but that is the series of events, as bizarre as it may seem.
Actually, I think the theory that you're throwing on the table, I think it holds water. You know, I was actually in Afghanistan when Fukushima did its thing. I was right on the Iranian border, actually, out with Baluch people, and I saw that thing happen, and I actually left Afghanistan and went straight to Japan.
Yeah.
And actually it took like a week to get there because I was out in the boondocks of Afghanistan. But I get to Japan, and the Navy, U.S. Navy told me they were going to let me get on that aircraft carrier, the Ronald Reagan. Then I show up to Japan and they're like, who are you? And I'm like, I'm the person that you just invited in from the boondocks of Afghanistan to get on the carrier, but I never got on it actually.
Wow.
And later they said that, and later you may have seen reports that the aircraft carrier itself was said to be irradiated from the plume I don't know if it's true or not. Maybe they're using that as a way to do something with the Ronald Reagan. I don't know. But one thing we do know, and you guys talk about it all the time on InfoWars, is that these, you know, the highest form of warfare is information war. I mean, it is the highest form of warfare. And and a lot of, as you know, there's often there's a real component to it. I mean, often a lot of people do die and that sort of thing. And often it's just, you know, but if you go to Fukushima now, you see those, electronic readouts of the how much radiation is flowing around there right now. It's amazing. They've depopulated a lot of that area. Interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And of course it's, I don't know, it's hard to see it as a coincidence when clearly the powers that be want to demonize cheap and effective energy production, and you have this very coincidental disaster leading to everything else. And just to emphasize what you were saying earlier, this story was published today from France 24. Blindsided, U.S. farmers strained as fertilizer costs surge in war. On a farm in North Carolina, planting and preparations are underway for corn and soybean crops, but fertilizer costs have surged on war in the Middle East, and orders he placed weeks ago have never arrived. So, I mean, this is already having tangible effect. I mean, we keep being told, oh, it's not going to affect us. It's not going to affect us. We have our own stuff. You know, it's just affecting Europe and China, so it's a good thing. But American farmers are getting hit with this fertilizer shortage, aren't they?
They are. They are. And, you know, I think it's going to get a lot worse. You know, the flash to bang on this is kind of slow because there's a lot of fertilizer in the pipeline. There's still a lot of nitrogen in the fields and that sort of thing. And we're eating food that was produced last year now. So when we fade into 2027, I think we're going to start feeling it like very heavy. Not, well, the energy we're going to start feeling very soon. You know, as the ships that are already out to sea, you know, as those things get, you know, used up, then we're going to start to feel the energy side. But when it comes to the crop side, that, but again, there's another way to fast forward this. That is if they close the Strait of Malacca, close the Turkish, you know, say the Bosphorus and the Danish Straits and those sorts of things, you close those and you know, close the Panama Canal. Closing the Panama Canal can have an impact. A lot of food flows through the Panama Canal from South America. A lot of food produced in South America flows both directions through the Panama Canal. So closing all these places, Malacca is huge. I mean, if you close the Strait of Malacca, I say huge. I mean, the Strait of Malacca is not huge, and the Strait of Singapore is tiny, actually. But the stuff that flows through there, huge. It's absolutely massive. I've been warning Japanese for years, by the way. If you see the Strait of Hormuz closed for any length of time, you should stock up heavy on food.
Yeah.
Right? And we're way into that. But I really think they're going to go for the, and one of the things I've talked about before, I think I talked about with you, was the Kra Isthmus Canal, right? And I talk about it all the time for years now. I first did a recon of that in 2014. There's no canal there now. But now with the Strait of Malacca threatened, the Chinese are like, yeah, we're going to build that canal through Thailand. The Kra Isthmus, Kra means turtle in Thailand. It's that like elephant trunk isthmus that goes down to, you know, from what is Thailand, and it goes down to Malaysia, right? So you could build a canal across there. It's been a dream for centuries. But now with the threat to the Strait of Malacca, I think they're going to go for it. And they'll probably build also the Funan Techo Canal through Cambodia from the Mekong River. Now, that'll go right through the Gulf of Thailand. I'm about to tell you something very important. That'll go right through the Gulf of Thailand. So if you look on a map of where the Funan Techo Canal will be, if they do that, and where the Kra Isthmus Canal will be, if they do that, which I think that they will, that goes right through the Gulf of Thailand. There's energy out there. Now, Israelis have been colonizing an island called Koh Tao. I've been there. Koh means island in Thai language. Koh Tao, K-H-O, next word is Tao, T-A-O. If you look where Koh Tao is in Koh Phangan and Koh Samui, that's right along the route that will be between the Funan Techo Canal and the Kra Isthmus Canal.
Well, that's very interesting. Hold on. Yeah, I'm going to have to see a map of this to fully understand what you're saying. We got to go to break. We'll be back in just a few minutes with Michael Yon. Follow him on X at Michael_Yon, MichaelYon.com as well. And we'll be back on the other side to pick it up right there. This is fascinating stuff. I hadn't even heard of these canals he's bringing up now.
I know you're the big health guy. You're way better shape than I am. Don't kick my ass. I've seen you working out with Liver King. You say you've taken methylene before. I want you to take our medical grade, take starting meds to kick in. So good for your body. I'd like you to drink this, Jay. You said earlier, what? I appreciate it. I want to get your true review. If it doesn't work, tell me. Here it is, brother.
He's cheers.
Looks just like the stuff from Doom, the water of life. He's drinking the juice of a strangled, drowned sandworm right now. Baron Harkonnen is not happy. We're going to see what happens.
20 minutes later.
I feel like my brain is clearer and working faster. It feels like my brain and my energy have had the accelerator hit on them. I felt it in my brain and my energy.
Well,
I'm going to get me some before I leave.
We're going to give you a couple bottles of it, bro. We love it. It's amazing. Get yours now. TheAlexShowStore.com.
I've been an Oilfield for as long as I've been an Info Warrior, 18 years. And Texan, born and raised, so I know like knives like you do. And I finally broke down and ordered one. I got the neon orange, and I'm blown away. I've had Benchmark knives that are easily $400. Had them for a year, lost them. This thing has the same feel, same quality, everything about it. I haven't had a knife stay this sharp in a long time, and I'm like horrible with equipment. I'm like very abusive with knives at work every day. I'm extremely impressed. I'm very impressed. So anybody out there listening, who knows there's a knife coming back in stock, get one. You know, any of them. I want to get the ring knife when it comes back out. Other than that, I'll join all the supplements and,
Yeah, particularly the pocket knives, the folding knives, the flip knives are super high quality at incredibly low prices. I mean, these same knives sell in stores all day for like $80 or something for like $40. We'll be right back.
Bovine Colostrum Plus, a really incredible new product that's flying off the shelves. What if one simple scoop a day could strengthen your body's natural defenses at every single stage of life? This is Bovine Colostrum Plus, nature's very first superfood, now in its purest, most potent form. For teens and kids, Colostrum Plus delivers 4,000 milligrams of immune-boosting IgG antibodies and 20 grams of premium protein to power growth, crush colds before they start, and keep young athletes recovering faster and staying in the game. In your 20s and 30s, it rebuilds your gut barrier, sharpens focus, and helps you bounce back from tough workouts and late nights like you're still 21. Hitting 40, 50, and beyond? Well, Bovine Colostrum Plus fights back against age-related immune decline, supports healthy inflammation levels, and keeps your joints, skin, and energy feeling years younger. One scoop, 500 milligrams of soothing marshmallow root for your gut, 500 milligrams of lactoferrin, nature's ultimate defender, and zero junk. Get it today at TheAlexJonesStore.com.
I was hoping you had some of the Alex Jones ones. How is Alex?
He's great. He lost a lot of weight.
I saw he's getting like, yeah, he's ready for the next
My friend
week.
Sean Johnson's training him.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he gets up every morning. He works out for hours. He's lost 70 pounds at this point. Hmm. He looks fantastic, man.
Yeah.
He looks fantastic. He looks like he's 20 years younger. People think, because this is really funny, because, you know, his whole business is conspiracy theories. So conspiracy that Alex has been replaced.
Yeah.
But listen, folks, that's real Alex. I've watched every step of the way, and my friend trains him. So I can tell you for a fact, that is the real Alex Jones. Quit drinking, quit eating bad food. He's eating healthy food now. He works out every day. It's like no Ozempic, no bullshit, no shortcuts. He did it the right way. He looks great.
You find it all at TheAlexShowStore.com, and it funds the most hardcore patriot organization worldwide, absolutely devastating the globalists in our peaceful information war.
Holy shit, he was right about every step of the way.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones. You found it, the tip of the spear. It is the Alex Jones Show.
I hear people.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Normally I host the War Room. I believe Rob Dew has taken that over for me tonight. I'm joined, of course, right now by Michael Yawn. I'll be joined by Kyle Serafin in the next hour. And then Matt Bracken takes over to interview Victor Boot in the fourth hour of today's Alex Jones Show broadcast. But I do got to tell you, folks, today and today only, every product on the AlexJonesStore.com that's branded InfoWars are 60% off. Shirts and hats, as well as the InfoWars Cooler Bundle. And I said it before, I'll say it again. You've probably heard the term last chance quite a bit on InfoWars because we're constantly having sales start and end. And so we'll say this is your last chance to get this sale or this is your last chance to be entered to win the raffle. And it's always true when we say that, but this is your last chance. This may be the last chance ever to get InfoWars branded material. InfoWars is shutting down. We will no longer be able to use this branding or sell this logo. So if you want some InfoWars merchandise, if you want a collectible, maybe just to put away and sell as a collector's item in the future, I wouldn't blame you. And now is the time. Today only, all InfoWars products are 60% off at thealexjonesstore.com. The InfoWars cooler bundle would be a great purchase as we get closer to summer. You're saving over $100 off. That's 60% off as well. VIP members pay even less. You get the ultimate portable cooler as well as InfoWars Edition polarized sunglasses and InfoWars Edition koozies. So lots of InfoWars branding on that, and it's on a just absolutely massive discount. I mean, honestly, if you're a VIP member, you're paying less than $64 for that cooler bundle when the cooler itself is worth more than that. You're getting all these other additions on top of it. And again, last chance, InfoWars branded products right now, today only 60% off, last chance ever to buy an InfoWars, officially InfoWars branded product before we shut down and they become a matter of history. Now with that, again, I'm happy to have Michael Yawn on the show with me today at Michael Yawn on X. I'm sorry, at Michael underscore Yawn on X, MichaelYawn.com, MichaelYawn.locals.com as well. I had not heard of this island you just mentioned, Koh Tao. I wrote it down, but it goes in line with other stuff we've been seeing. You said it's been sort of colonized by Israelis. I want you to expand on that because at the same time, there's been rumors and stories recently from March of this year. Israeli officials suggest purchasing Greek islands as a haven for Jewish people. There's a story from Gen X Girl on Substack, Argentina to accept 300,000 Israelis to create a Israeli mini state within Argentina. And now you're telling me there's this, I mean, what do you mean when you say the Israelis are, you know, colonizing this island? And is this happening all over the place and we're just not aware of it?
Oh yeah. In fact, actually, instead of locals, I'm on Substack, by the way. And anyway, to mention that, but I'm on Substack pretty often. But when it comes to where are the Israelis going? They're obviously, going to Cyprus and that sort of thing. And they're going down to Argentina, which we went down there and looked at that. It's quite fascinating. And they're also going to Panama, right? Now, and they're going to many places, but if you look at the places they're going to, a landing strip, you might say, has been built for them. Not a physical landing strip, but Guatemala is prepped as well. Let's put it that way. Hmm. We went down to Guatemala and looked. Now, if you look at Thailand, the places where the Israelis are going, or one of them is called Pai. I've been up there looking at it. Pai, P-A-I. It's in northern Thailand. And you'll see that's a strategic route that the Japanese were at during World War II. So that's strategic. Now you go to Koh Tao and those three islands that you saw when you look up Koh Tao, there's Koh Tao, Koh Phangan, and Koh Samui. I've been out on those islands for several months, right? So Koh Tao is where, and Koh Phangan, there's a lot of Israelis there, right? Now, if you look at the Funan Techo Canal and where it's not open, the Funan Techo Canal is not built, but the proposed Funan Techo Canal in Cambodia, and you look at where the Kra Isthmus Canal will be, that Koh Tao is a perfect place to have influence over the, it's clear, by the way, let's set the table on this. It's clear, by the way, that Thailand is being, attacked to be destroyed. Crystal clear to me. Now, where's my background on this? I'm very familiar with Thailand. I used to have an office there. I wrote the last two pages in one of the prime minister's book. It's called the book is called The Simple Truth. I wrote the last two pages, actually. I've been all over Thailand, every province. Thailand is the hyphen in Indo-Pacific security. It's a very important place, right? That's why the United States and others have put so much emphasis on Thailand for generations, right? And that's why I put so much emphasis on Thailand. I first went to look at the Kra Isthmus Canal potential project in 2014, right? Because I could see that this is at some point probably will come to pass. Now that will allow the users of the Kra Isthmus Canal to bypass the Strait of Malacca. Now a dream of building a canal across the Kra Isthmus, Kra in Thai language means turtle, by the way. So turtle isthmus, let's say a dream of of making that canal is at least several centuries old, maybe 4 centuries old. I haven't been able to find the, I don't know how far back it goes, but it goes back very far. I haven't been able to find the first reference, but it goes back very far. And, you know, I've got an old map from the 1800s, actually, where there, you know, it's drawn. It's not made yet. It's very difficult. You know, Suez was difficult to make, but Suez was a joke to make compared to the Panama Canal. Panama Canal was very difficult. Craw Isthmus Canal is even more difficult, right?
Right.
Otherwise it would already be built. But it could be built though. It's not a technical reason why it's not been built. There's political reasons as well. Like the British did not want to bypass, they didn't want anybody bypassing the Strait of Malacca. Now China wants to be able to bypass the Strait of Malacca because China, that's why just in the last 24 hours or so, China is getting, you know, starting to talk about Craw Isthmus very loud now. Now they've already got the plans to do it. Thailand bucks back and pushes back on those plans because what Thailand is concerned about is if numerous things. One, if they build the canal, it'll be good for Thailand on some aspects, but there's a breakaway, you know, there's a war in those bottom three provinces that border Malaysia. And some of the Thai leadership is concerned that a canal would be like, hey, there's a split between us, even though it's just a canal. And, you know, we're going to break off for real. You know, they would love the secessionists, right? Anyway, not to go into all the internal details, but Thailand itself is clearly under attack. For instance, now they've got, thousands of cannabis licenses have been issued in the last, 4 years. They've got cannabis stores all over the place now. In fact, I went into a lot of those stores, in Bangkok. If you look on, say, Google Maps, you'll see cannabis stores everywhere. But the maps that you see online, there's a lot more in person, actually, that haven't populated the maps yet. But that's one of the primary weapons, by the way, on dumbing people down.
Right.
Is intoxicants, whether that be alcohol, cannabis, or whatever. And if you watch the countries that are targeted, like Israel itself is being targeted by the same Zionist, actually. I know that sounds maybe like that would never happen, but that is 100% happening. I mean, the Zionists are actually targeting Israelis as well. They don't care about Israelis. They don't care about a homeland for the Jews. That's about routes and resources. That's, you know, what that's about.
You know, it's really interesting. Just on that note, because I was going to talk about this anyway, but just to emphasize your point, somebody posted this map of the ethno-religious diversity of Lebanon, just showing that, you know, while Lebanon is sort of slandered as this extremist country, it's like, no, there's actually huge parts with the majority Catholic, majority appears other Christian, which would be Orthodox Christian or Greek Orthodox in the orange. But Gad Saad actually responded to this map saying, oh, gee, where'd all the Jews go? Didn't Lebanon used to have a big population of Jews? And the answer is actually the final exodus of Lebanese Jews happened in August 1982 when Israeli forces invaded Lebanon and laid siege to Beirut. Over 100 Jewish families were displaced after Israeli forces bombarded the Jewish quarter, leaving it nearly abandoned, and shelled its synagogue, which suffered extensive damage. By 2005, the Jewish quarter of Beirut only held 40 to 200 Jews. They just bombed the synagogue in Iran, where there's a sizable Jewish population. So just to emphasize and sort of confirm what you're saying, the Zionists don't give a damn about Jews, and if it's Jews in a country they want to target, oh, well, they'll have to pay the price along with all the non-Jews. So just to emphasize what you're saying.
You're bringing up something extreme. Where'd you get that book, man? I got to get that. The Ethno-Religious Diversity of Lebanon. I got to get that. All right.
This was posted on X. I don't know. I'll send it to you.
Oh, thank you very much. And listen, this is very important because you've spurred something important. There's a lot of Lebanese, actually, that speak Spanish fluently, right? And so they have a very close relationship there with Panama Venezuela as well. Anyway, and some other parts down there. So interestingly, I mean, they speak Spanish natively, right?
Right.
And so what's interesting is, you saw the fire under the bridge at Panama, last week or so. And I think they'll probably, this is my guess. I think that what'll happen is the United States, let's say the Zionists, because the big power structures in Panama are Zionist and Chinese Communist Party. Chinese and Zionists are moving in hard on Panama, and they have been for generations, actually. So, but what I'm getting to is the Zionists can then use that, the bridge, fire, and blame that on the Iranians. There's Iranians that live in Panama too, and also blame it on the Lebanese because the Lebanese have a serious home base there in Panama. So the Zionists can use that to then, first of all, send more U.S. forces into Panama. and also to target the Lebanese and Iranians and others who live there that the Zionists want to get out of Panama. I think you're going to see that happening because that's like a no-brainer for those who are following the larger aspects of the war. You know, that they're at war with Lebanon, and they don't want the Lebanese, you know. I've been right over there. I've been right where that fire was.
That's crazy. Walk
under that bridge. I've walked under there quite a few times showing people. I took Brett Weinstein down there and all kinds of other people. It's quite fascinating.
Certainly doesn't look like an accident. And of course, that all combines interestingly with the other news stories today about Trump going after the Pope, and Spain and Italy are breaking with Israel. And so we're going to start sanctioning them. Lebanon is like, very large portions of that country are Catholic. So you see the Catholics sort of trying to intervene and stop. So there's this like Israeli Catholic friction cropping up that I think is sort of an interesting dynamic to what you're describing.
Oh, yeah. That's been going on for, I don't know, 2,000 years.
Oh, right. The whole time, I guess. Yeah. If you really look into it.
Has been going on for a while.
That's right.
We're looking at a really mature tree here. You know what I mean? Or a jungle. So, I mean, this is a, you know, oh yeah, we could go on for hours and hours about that, but and you'll hear people like Netanyahu talk about the Romans and they talk about them like this is an ongoing fight with the Romans.
Right.
I mean, they, you know.
And we're the new Rome, apparently.
Terms. Yeah, exactly. And so it's an old fight. Remember, wars are about routes, resources, and ideology. That's what every war you've ever studied is about, either one of those things, two of those things, or all three. This is about all three. And one of the ideologies wants global depopulation. Not all of them. Some of them are not. Some of them don't want, you know, some of the oligarchical systems don't have, they have different ideologies, right?
Right.
And some want depopulation, and they're going for it. And I think they're going to get it. I think they're going to get a huge depopulation. They've already got a huge amount with the death jabs. I don't know how many, and how many will, and, you know, end up radiating into the future from the jabs and the other pharma weapons. But when it comes to the food, you know, I think in the next couple of years, we're going to start to see a dramatic population decrease.
Yeah. And it's all about control, right? So even the dying off is really about, well, it's too hard to control all these people. If there was a lot fewer of them and they were a lot dumber and hooked on weed and pornography, it'd be real easy to control them. So that's what gives the impetus behind a lot of those movements.
Oh, you said something important. The weed. They're pushing it in Argentina too. We went to the big expo, right? And they're clearly, the Zionists are going for Argentina, as are the Chinese, right? We went to, my wife Masako and I, we went to the CPAC thing down there, and Ben Shapiro spoke. They opened it with Viva Argentina, Viva Estados Unidos, and Viva Israel. This was in Buenos Aires. Yeah. And Buenos Aires has, you know, long been a home seat for Jews and Nazis, right? It's just one of the biggest Jewish cities in the world is Buenos Aires and Naziville, right? Because they work together very closely. I mean, specifically the Zionists. I mean, look at this stuff. I mean, I just happened to have it on my desk. You know, how the Zionists were working with the Nazis. They were best buddies, man.
There was a story about that today. It's somewhere on my desk. I'll find it in just a second. But it was revealed today. Some papers were uncovered that showed some cooperation with the early Israeli sort of terror groups that were operating there. Here it is. Declassified files expose Jewish pre-state underground militias contacts with Nazi Germany. So again, just to emphasize what you're saying, we've got a story from today about that exact case. Stern's Nazi gamble.
Oh, Zionists and Jews have been killing each other for more than a century. I mean, the Zionists killed one of the most famous ones was when the Zionists killed a Dutch Jew in Palestine in about 1924. What was his name? He was some Dutch poet. And they assassinated him because the Zionists and Jews have been killing each other like crazy. You'll see Jewish partisans killing Zionists, and Zionists were causing part of the pogroms because the Zionists were trying to get the Jews to move down to Israel.
That's right. Because,
you know, the big Zionist is Malyakovsky. You know, I mean, here's Malyakovsky's daddy right here. Malyakovsky, Netanyahu. And by the way, the guy down in Argentina, Malay, his name was Malyakovsky too.
Wow.
This was Benjamin Netanyahu, the current, I guess, prime minister, if he's still alive. This is his father, Benjamin Netanyahu. But their name was Malyakovsky, right?
Right.
They changed the name to Netanyahu in roughly 1920. And his father, okay, the grandfather was a Russian rabbi. This guy was born in Warsaw. That's the father of the current alleged prime minister who is still alive. So they changed their name in the 1920s to Netanyahu. They're Malyakovsky, just like our, you know, just like the Malay guy down in Argentina, Malyakovsky, right? So, I mean, but keep in mind, they were all about getting the Jews down to Israel because that was about routes and resources. And the British crown, the British intelligence and whatnot was the one that they were supporting these guys hard. Theodor Herzl and all those guys, right? You know, Theodor Herzl was the original gangster for the British when it came to getting the Zionists together. And, you know, his name is on these. I've showed you before the share warrant that issued in 1899 to get the Jews to go down to Palestine, you know, to make the colony down there. Theodor Herzl's name is the first name on there, right? And the British are the ones that sponsored all that. And keep in mind, these colonies are nothing new. My family came over to the United States with the Virginia Company of London, and they were shipwrecked on Bermuda in 1609. Their name's in there, the Eason's. That's my mother's side, right? My direct line. And that's the reason Bermuda is part of, the oldest territory of Great Britain now, United Kingdom, is because of that shipwreck. It was called the Sea Venture. It was the flagship of the Virginia Company of, London. In fact, here's some of their old records. I just happen to have it out today. I mean, this is a book from 1906, I think, right?
Wow.
There's four of these books. Anyway, this, you know, it goes through my family was on there. They were on the Sea Venture, got shipwrecked. And what I'm getting to is they raised money to make the colony, just like colonies all over the world. They raise money, sell shares out of the island. That's how the Scottish ended up getting absorbed by England because they went bankrupt because they started a colony in Derry in Panama, actually. And they went bankrupt in the 1690s. So they got absorbed in about 1706 or seven by the English, but because Great Britain did not exist yet. When the Scottish went bankrupt in Darien, they had two missions, lost about 2,000 people, the Darien Project. They went bankrupt, and that was when England absorbed Scotland. And a lot of Scottish people don't realize that. The reason that it became the United Kingdom of England and Scotland was because Scotland went bankrupt in Darien, Panama, right? Now, then, you know, if Scotland had succeeded, it would probably be the United Kingdom of Scotland and England,
right,
instead of England and Scotland, right? I mean, because the Scottish would have been kicking some butt, right? But it was all about these routes and resources, and they went bankrupt. And so, I mean, all these colonies, company towns all over America, that sort of thing, you know, these company towns, America was built on company towns. Our whole country was built, you know, in service of routes and resources, right? Company towns where the company, let's say you want to have a copper mine and there you go, the Darien scheme, man. That's fascinating stuff. I've got several books on it. I'm down in Darien all the time. They still got that fort out there in the jungle. And actually, the place where the Scottish picked was one of the major routes where we almost built the canal. The Scottish picked well. Those Scottish, man, they're smart. They picked the right place. They definitely picked the right place. But, you know, they didn't succeed due to various reasons. One is, the mosquitoes were not happy with them.
Right.
The Darien jungle is really dangerous.
No, they were much, much happier in the frozen wastes of Canada. They thrived in Canada and, in different places like that. Let me ask, cause we don't have too much, longer. And I got this story that, I'll play the video on the other side, but I want your input as a expert of warfare and the changing nature of warfare from Politico, and we've got the video about this. Robots captured Russian army positions for the first time in history, Zelensky says. He says that a battalion of robots and only robots captured a Russian position. It's the first time in history that an enemy position was taken exclusively by unmanned platforms, ground systems, and drones. I mean, this seems like a watershed moment in human history. We now have the first successful mission entirely with unmanned drones being carried out.
Think about that in regard to these AI centers, these data centers,
yep,
right? So when you can make massive amounts of robots you've got the data and the ability to control those robots, whether they're drones that are ground drones or air drones or hybrid or water drones or whatever. I mean, you can control a lot of planet Earth just by using your data centers and your drone technology.
Yep.
It's a very serious thing. you know, this is future world, right?
It's a scary world we're moving into, and there's more and more videos being posted of little robot dogs patrolling parking garages and things. I mean, we're the frog in the boiling pot, and the heat being applied is AI and data centers, and of course, that is completely at odds with the climate change agenda and the, you know, we have to save the earth and not use electricity. I mean, the data centers, the amount of electricity they use is unimaginable. The one in Ohio that they're building is going to use the equivalent of 9 nuclear power plants on one data facility, and it's not going to benefit the people at all. I mean, again, how do we get through to people about what's actually going on here? Because they're being told, well, you know, we need these data centers for, I don't even know what the claimed reason for data centers is, because the only thing they're going to do with it is enslave us. Like, that's the only possible use they could have for it. They're being tossed and, you know, pulled and pushed in all these different directions. We've got to save the earth and not use electricity. Actually, now we need infinite electricity for these data centers. How do we break through to people to let them know, like, what's really going on here?
If they haven't woken up now, I mean, it's a big deal. They'll die. They'll literally die. And, this is significant, to put it mildly. And, you can see that clearly is the direction that it's going. You know, here in Japan, you can already see in some restaurants up in Tokyo, they got robots as servers.
Yep.
Or you go into some buildings and it's like robots that are cleaning and actually patrolling the hallways, you know, and in the airports too. I've seen that in Thailand as well. I've seen it in various countries where in the airports, you'll see, you know, these robots, you know, going around and blinking, their eyes blink, you know, that's what, it's creepy. It's hardcore creepy.
That is very creepy. I still have a visceral response whenever I see Ro. I just want to destroy them. I'm a Luddite like that, I guess you could say. But hey, I'd rather have a robot checking me in than somebody that doesn't speak English and just arrived 3 months ago. But this is the false dichotomy we're being presented with.
Harrison, you just did a throwaway. Luddite. You know, that's where the word sabotage came from, was those guys.
That's
Luddites, right?
They
would, or their Sabo shoes.
The wooden clogs would clog up the machines, yeah.
Yeah, you do a lot of throwaways, man, that should, you know, keep talking about it. It's very important.
Well, we could spend, all day on this stuff, on each one of these little stories. I mean, there's so much more to get into. We only got 1 minute left. There's not enough time to cover this, but just since you might have insight, missing nuclear official becomes 10th person died to dark pattern surrounding U.S. secrets. I mean, any insight on what's causing these nuclear scientists to go missing?
I don't know. I don't know anything. And it's obviously, interesting, to put it mildly again.
Yeah.
I just don't know what's happening. Yeah.
But hey, it's not sort of out of, what you'd expect with everything else that we're seeing with the attacks on energy worldwide to try to create this massive die-off. This is the most important thing we could be talking about right now, since it's going to affect everybody on Earth, and it's coming whether we like it or not. Michael Yon, thank you so much. As always, follow Michael Yon on X at Michael_Yon, MichaelYon.com, and is it MichaelYon.substack.com?
Michael Yon, and look up Big Honey. It'll pop up.
Big Honey, Michael Yon on Substack. Well, thank you so much for joining us, sir. We'll talk to you again soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Always a pleasure. All right, folks, we're going to be back for the third hour of the Alex Jones Show shortly with Kyle Serafin to answer questions. We're going to get back into domestic news with him. Please support us by going to thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison. Last chance to get InfoWars branded material.
I've been an oil spill for as long as I've been an info warrior, 18 years. And Texan, born and raised, so I know, like, knives like you do. And I finally broke down and ordered one. I got the neon orange, and I'm blown away. I've had Benchmark knives that are easily $400. Had them for a year, lost them. This thing has the same feel, same quality, everything about it. I haven't had a knife stay this sharp in a long time, and I'm, like, horrible with equipment. I'm, like, very abusive with knives at work every day. I'm extremely impressed. I'm very impressed. So anybody out there listening, who knows there's a knife comes back in stock, get one. You know, any of them. I want to get the ring knife when it comes back out. Other than that, I'll join all the supplements and,
Yeah, particularly the pocket knives, the folding knives, the flip knives are super high quality at incredibly low prices. I mean, these same knives sell in stores all day for like $80 or something like $40. We'll be right back. Now, coming up in just the next month or so, it looks like this is finally it. They're finally going to be able to shut down InfoWars, but they won't shut you down as InfoWarriors, and that term and that name lives forever. The InfoWar lives forever. In the potential twilight of InfoWars itself as InfoWars.com, we've launched a limited edition line of the InfoWars 1776 limited edition line. A whole bunch of new shirts, a whole bunch of new hats that are limited edition that take a lot of the classic InfoWars shirts. This is the all-time bestseller, navy blue with red InfoWars on it, and adding on the shoulder 1776. These are historic shirts, and they're symbols of your support and your being part of this operation and helping the operation grow and expand into the future. So take action now at thealexjonesstore.com and look at these two new amazing lines.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones.
I would not intentionally spray my children with or family with toxic aerosols, but as you must know, 80% or better do not have any family or children.
I have contacted the Virginia Pollution Control Board, National Weather Service, Oceana and Damneck military bases, NOAA, NASA, the Department of Defense, Brookhaven National Laboratory, the Department of Energy, the Department of Homeland Security, FEMA, the Health Department, the Department of Travel, countless federal agents and operators, the Virginia Beach Police Department, and even the White House, all to no avail.
Indigo pilots are chosen from the top ranks within the Air Force, Navy, and Coast Guard. Most of the pilots are, quote, hardened to humanity, unquote, and could care less about killing off unwanted or leeching aspects of America and the world. I swear to you, the majority of the pilots are like machines. I call them tanker terminators. We are paid more than any other pilot for our service, other than Air Force One pilots, who make as much or more and are kept in a dark secret world for their own protection.
There is a rising international concern about the existence of airborne chemical spraying, bolstered by a growing body of scientific evidence. What is in the air that we are breathing?
A decade and a half into public radar, the fight against aerial geoengineering has shifted from fringe suspicion to a populist front line against unelected technocrats playing God with the atmosphere.
We're in a war. This is a war against me, you, our children, our grandchildren, and generations to come. This is war raised upon us.
These programs consist of spraying tons of patented aerosol pollutants into our skies without public consent. This includes aluminum, barium, strontium, and more.
I don't want some creep ramming chemicals down my throat without my permission.
Pushback has finally reached the EPA and the HHS, now forced to at least pretend to look into it amid mounting state-level revolts. The Environmental Protection Agency established public reporting systems and launched dedicated web resources on contrails and geoengineering, claiming total transparency.
In the case of stratospheric aerosol injection, it's not like it's thoroughly studied, it's approved, it's trusted. Instead, you have people who just want to do it on their own, like try to get themselves someone to hand over $1 billion to just go dump a whole bunch of sulfur dioxide into the stratosphere. There are entities and people who would want to drastically scale these activities up.
In multiple states, including Florida, Tennessee, and Montana, legislation passed or advanced outright prohibiting weather modification and geoengineering, with bills in over a dozen other states demanding investigations into suspected atmospheric tampering. A federal Clear Skies Act proposal seeks to ban such activities nationwide, complete with EPA-led probes into public complaints.
And we have documents to prove the existence of these programs going back decades, documents hundreds of pages long. We have an 800-page U.S. Senate document from 1978 outlining the scope and scale of these programs then, specifically calling for intergovernmental cooperation, even between, quote, otherwise adversarial nations, because of the cross-border ramifications of these programs. You can't just geoengineer over your own country. Who's the biggest player? Obviously, the United States of America, because of the size of our military. The U.S. military has three times more aerial tankers, which are the primary aircraft used in these operations, three times more than all other militaries in the world combined.
Soil, water, and snow samples across the heartland still show anomalous metal spikes correlating with heavy spray days, while respiratory issues, brain fog, crop failures, and bizarre weather patterns fuel demands for real answers.
The amount of aluminum in our soil now is 5 times to 10 times higher than it was even last year.
They're now creating crops that aren't bothered by aluminum. It's like, okay, well, we're going to pump the skies full of aluminum. Then you're going to be forced to buy our aluminum-resistant seeds to survive, which is just crazy.
What began as bold vows to expose the aerial spraying of aluminum, barium, and strontium has been reduced to bureaucratic whispers. Kennedy's warnings of stratospheric aerosol injections and weather weaponization have been abandoned. Another knife in the back from those who swore they'd stand with the people against the globalist experiment over our heads. John Bowne, 44 Infowars.
What's this? Oh, I've got power plant. Oh, what's this? I've got methyl drive. The two ingredients in the power drive bundle, which is available at thealexjonesstore.com. Take them. Pure power, pure energy, raise testosterone, improve mitochondrial function, methylation genes in enzymatic processes throughout the body. Pairs perfectly, absolutely perfectly with Methylene Blue. These are the two products made to work in conjunction together with Methylene Blue. I made them, I developed them, high quality mineral blends, methylation blends, adaptogenic herbs, functional mushrooms, and the CoQ10, the PQQ. What you want for metabolic health and mitochondrial function. I want you to win today. I want you to succeed. Take out the enemy. Choose freedom.
We are on the march. The Empire is on the run. Broadcasting live from the UN stronghold, Austin, Texas. You're listening to The Alex Jones Show.
Welcome back. Ladies and gentlemen, third hour of The Alex Jones Show is on. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live this Tuesday afternoon now, 14th of April, joined by Kyle Serafin. You know him well. You can find him online at KyleSerafin.com and on Kyle on Truth Social, X, YouTube, everywhere at Kyle Serafin and The Kyle Serafin Show, .podbean.com, as well as on Rumble. Just type Kyle Serafin. You'll find him everywhere. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thanks for having me. It's been a while since I've seen you, Harrison. Good to see you.
It's been a while. And, what a crazy news cycle that we find ourselves in. Some breaking news. We have a new accuser of, Eric Swalwell as his entire career goes down in flames. Have you been following this? What's your take on the latest with Eric Swalwell?
I kind of zoom out a little bit further when I look at what's going on there, because I think Eric Swalwell, he's a symptom of a bigger disease.
Exactly.
Which is that we keep electing people that are morally flawed and they're kind of bankrupt. I discussed it this morning on my program, but I remember being in high school. This is going back to like 98, 99. And I was sitting in there and it was like a, you know, American government AP class, something like this. And the instructor was discussing the phenomenon of horribly low favorability ratings for Congress as an institution.
Right.
But generally speaking, pretty high ratings for people's individual congressperson. And sort of how does that even work? And the game is the same, and it's every single political advertisement you've heard in your entire life that I've heard in my life and everybody in your audience, no matter how old they are, has also heard. It's the same thing. It goes like this. There's corruption. There's bad things. I'm going to go to Washington to fight for whatever it is you like. I'm going to fight for energy. I'm going to fight for reindustrialization. I'm going to fight for your values. Whatever it is, they're going to fight for something because they're a bunch of crooks and I'm a really good guy. Yeah. And I've got to go there to fight against the crooks. So send me to go fight with the crooks. And then we're supposed to believe that they go there and they don't become the crooks that they're theoretically fighting against. When in fact, my guess is most of those people are already kind of morally flexible. They're already kind of soft on whatever it is, and they're already kind of impressionable. And then they show up, and then all they got to do is do a couple of bad things in the right people's attention span, and then you're owned forever. Mm-hmm. My buddy Steve Baker refers to it as the Praetorian Guard, but this is the individual members of the United States Capitol Police that do a lot of the security work for congresspeople. Who knows your secrets better than the people that protect you? I mean, right. There's an idea that you would have that in the Secret Service. They keep that quiet, right? There's an muerta. They're supposed to kind of keep their mouths shut. Whatever they see, it doesn't go any further. That's kind of a general thing in security details. People forget that the United States Capitol Police are doing that for members of Congress. They also have all the dirt for however long these people live. And a lot of these people are in there for 15, 20, 30 years. So you think they don't have the goods on them? And they can lean and they scratch each other's backs. And I think that's what we're seeing with Eric Swalwell. When you become politically inconvenient, maybe you're stepping up and we want to put somebody else into the space, we'll just destroy you with the stuff that we've had. We've got the file on you already, whoever it is. You know, it's like, too bad you did all those stupid things when you thought you were invincible because you're young and you're attractive and you're fit and you sound good and you're in California. We'll just put somebody else instead of you. We'll just drop you out and on your head.
Yeah, that's the amazing thing about what's happening with Eric Swalwell. It's not about him in particular. I have no interest in delving into the sordid details of this scumbag. But obviously, there's just a mountain of blackmail that's been there for years. Now he's, I guess, you know, done something. He's pissed somebody off. He's gone against some power structure, and they've just decided to unleash it all. So, again, it's not about Eric Swalwell. It's about this almost industrial scale blackmail operation. I've never seen blackmail wielded with such an obvious way and such an effective way against Eric Swalwell. The man, he quits. He's not running for governor. He's dropping out of Congress. I mean, he threw his hands up and says, uncle. And apparently this has been looming over his head the entire time. You got to ask how this has altered maybe decisions he's made, votes he's made, statements he's made. For years, they've had this info. I mean, this is crazy.
Yeah, and last year he was really cocky about the 216th person to sign on to the Epstein Files Transparency Act. So he was out there saying, you know, I stand with women and sexual assault victims and all this kind of stuff, all the while. You know, I feel like all these people are probably compromised to what, you know, degree. And you can't really say, this is why I think it's a fool's battle. I had a conversation with a congressman that I actually respect. And the statement was something to the effect of, I wouldn't wish it upon you to be a member of Congress.
Wow.
I was like, yeah, well, I don't want to do it. It doesn't sound fun. It doesn't sound interesting. The people that are drawn to it always seem like a certain personality type. There's a reason why they say that that Washington, D.C. is sort of like Hollywood for ugly people.
Yep.
And we're getting slightly less ugly people every once in a while, but I have no instinct that they're any better human beings, that they're – I feel like they're morally compromised. And so it's not surprising to us when we have that moment and these people – end up being exposed for exactly what you think. I mean, take Tony Gonzalez. There's actually four scandals that are going on right now, two on each side of the aisle. One of them is Corey Mills, who's been credibly accused of stolen valor and a bunch of abuse of women, some really shady stuff that he did maybe with the FBI. And so you just read these stories, but he's buddies with Cash Patel, so he's probably safe for now. You see other people, like Tony Gonzalez is also, he's resigning and withdrawing, and his scandal was really wild. Like, a woman set herself on fire over it, apparently.
Yeah.
So this broadly speaking, you talk about industrial scale and sort of the mechanization of a blackmail operation. That's what everybody assumed Jeffrey Epstein was about. Like, that was the kind of claim that was going on. And Eric Swalwell's claim was that he didn't do anything wrong. The allegations are 100% false, and he's dropped out of his race so that he can handle them appropriately, and he's got to, you know, take up his his misdeeds with his wife where it belongs. Well, yeah, I do agree that you should handle your misdeeds with your wife if there are some. But nobody drops out of a political race because of false allegations. That's not right. How it works. Nobody disappears from public life or gets arrested in something where you've had all this swirling sort of smoke forever, and then there's some other kind of fire, like, you know, Prince Andrew's situation, where it was like, oh, he was trading in state secrets, and that's why we had to arrest him. It had nothing to do with the fact that we just, you know, have more Epstein releases. All of these things look the same to me, which is that these people give themselves away by their actions. Mm-hmm. It's a tacit agreement that there was a problem. It's as simple as the thing that Donald Trump just got into by tweeting out a picture of himself as Jesus.
Yep.
He's like, well, I was a doctor and I help people. Well, nobody believes that. Like you'd have to be completely retarded to actually think that. So either Donald Trump thinks the audience are retarded, or he's retarded, or, you know, people are retarded and they actually do believe that, which is all scary. Those are kind of the three possibilities.
You're exactly right. Although I do like that, I saw Alex Jones tweet yesterday, because I covered that yesterday, and he said, hey, at least he didn't say he was Jesus. There is that silver lining. He could have come out and said, yeah, I retweeted it. I am Jesus. You should be worshiping me. Which, hey, I guess we're hanging our hat on whatever silver lining we can get these days.
But here's the thing. He deleted it. He deleted it, which is a tacit admission that he knew it was stupid and wrong. And like, am I offended as a Christian? No, I'm not offended. I just think it's stupid. I just think you're alienating people that are simple-minded. You're giving people a thing to go and talk about. And the incredible thing about that is that the news cycle should have been covered by multiple different Congress people dropping out of Congress because of salacious and scandalous allegations. And instead, it's like Donald Trump did some photo op at the White House with some lady who was pretending to deliver McDonald's or pizza, and he wasn't sure what the script said. She wasn't able to comment on anything outside of the script. And we're talking about that and him dressed up like in a Jesus robe pretending to be a doctor, instead of talking about the really legit scandal, which is that our members of Congress are proving that they're compromised, which we all expected. Exactly. And they're just showing us that it's the case.
Exactly. You're exactly right. Again, the scandal is not, oh, Eric Swalwell is a degenerate. It's like, okay, yeah, duh. No, the real scandal is like, how do they have four accusers and two videotapes and it's all just sitting there waiting to go? And you got to ask, how many times has Eric Swalwell come out and said, I think I'm going to vote this way? And they just sort of hold up the DVD with his crimes on it and go, you sure you're going to vote that way? I mean, we have no idea. We have no way of knowing. This is why this is so. It's not even so much about his morality. Like, okay, politicians are immoral. I think we can kind of accept that. It's about what that morality means for the functioning of our country and how these people can be controlled and manipulated. And at the end of the day, it's us that suffer. It's us that aren't represented because they're busy trying to keep themselves out of jail representing whoever is blackmailing them. I mean, it represents the total inversion of our governmental system.
I also don't see a lot of discussion about the other men that are in that video, which is bizarre. As a man in my 40s, I think that the last time that I was like playfully pawing at a woman, even like a woman that I was dating, was probably in my 20s.
Right.
It's probably 20 years in my rearview mirror at this point. I don't do that sitting on a bed with other men with my wife. I don't remember doing that with girlfriends going way, way back. I don't know what guy is doing that. And you have a man who's roughly my age, who's apparently a father and a husband, sitting there like pawing some gal. And there's another dude there, and there's someone that's running a camera. I mean, all of this stuff is bizarre. So when you look at that, you're like, what sort of terrible judgment? When I was in the military, we called it bad decision theater. It's like when you see like a young 19-year-old guy go walk onto a car lot that's just off the military base. And he's like looking at a Ford Mustang, which is like it's a 6-cylinder Mustang, not the 8. And he comes back to you and he's like, hey man, what do you think about a 17% interest rate? They don't give those out to everybody. It's like, yeah, man, it's called bad decision theater. Like I can see how it's going to unfold. It all looks stupid and you're probably going to do it anyway. That guy thought it was okay to paw a woman with two male witnesses, and God knows who else knew what was going on in there, on camera. I mean, it wasn't like the camera was like a surreptitious, you know, James O'Keefe hidden camera, button camera. Somebody was holding up a phone, videoing him paw some lady and pull her back and mouth kiss her, who apparently was a sex worker. That was the claim. All of that, like the number of like stop signs that he ran through to get into that point is so numerous. It's crazy to me that a grown man would get there.
Yeah, it says a lot about their confidence that they can get away with this stuff, that they're not worrying, or they're just like, yeah, I'm blackmailed, I'm a slave, but at the end of the day, I'm still a congressman, so I'm winning. Like maybe they're fine with it. It's like, this is what I got to do to get the power. Great. I'll be a slave. I'll be a puppet. I mean, it's good for memes. It's good for the meme culture, at least, at the very least.
Yeah.
Right?
It's so bad for everything else. Tom Massey talks about the pin, the congressional pin being the precious, and right, that as much as he can, he takes it off. And I've heard him say that. And I think that's everybody's sort of instinct with power. Look, we see it at every level. We see people go into the White House. We've got a president right now who claimed he was going to do a bunch of things with the power of the presidency, which, by the way, I'm not a big fan of the executive unilateral power move. I didn't like it when Barack Obama did it. I don't think we should elect a king. I really like it if like the Article I powers stayed in Article I, but they don't seem to want to do that. So it's hard for me to fight them as just a regular guy talking. But they don't throw away the things that are powerful. They don't throw out the intelligence apparatus. They don't like de-weaponize the law enforcement agencies. They don't take the intelligence components away from the DHS, from the FBI, you know, from the various different components of DOJ. They just don't do it. And I have to believe it's like, yeah, I'm holding on to the precious. I will wield it for good. And there's no evidence of anyone ever getting that weapon and being like, we're wielding it for good, because you wield it a few times and it feels probably pretty powerful. And then somebody comes to you and says, hey, by the way, it'd be a real shame if everybody knew about fill in the blank thing that we know about you, or all the stuff that we've been doing, or we've got this goods on you. I mean, it's inevitable that these people get captured, or they just play to your weaknesses. Like, you're talking about an entire government that's built up, and we seem to believe that it's run by these people. I don't think it's not, because the intelligence apparatus is designed to recruit people in whatever way that you're able to be recruited. And I say that as someone who worked as an FBI agent who was trained how to like go and pick sources up. It turns out picking up sources is a lot like what I used to do when I was in sales. It's like getting a client. So it's not all that foreign to regular people. If you've ever done a sale in a business, if you've ever been involved in that, it's like you make a friend. Sometimes you need to make a friend with some leverage. Right. So maybe you got to do that. But generally speaking, if you're really good at it, you're personable, you have some things in common, and you find out, hey, you have the same interests as me and we want the same outcomes, and I'm able to phrase what I want you to do in a way that sounds good to both of us.
Right.
Well, that's great. And then sometimes you have a picture or a video of a guy hanging out with a hooker, and he doesn't want his wife to know. So then you got that too. So yeah. Those are two easy ways. It's like, oh, we could either do it with carrot or stick. They talked about it during the Twitter files. This is just every single instance ends up being the same thing to me.
Yeah. And of course, the NSA has been spying on members of Congress. That was like kind of a big scandal, but nothing was ever done about it. And they're still being spied on. So they know not to go against the intelligence agencies. I mean, they might not even know who's blackmailing them and with what. It's just like, oh, gee, they've got all this information. Maybe it's just an envelope under the door with pictures on it, just going, hey, vote this way. I mean, this is the way our government actually operates. It's insane, but this is it. This is how it actually works. And you brought up Trump and sort of the promises that he made and the disappointment that it represents at this point. I mean, he's still got time. It feels crazy that we're only a little over a year into the second administration. It feels like this administration, the second round, has gone on for 10 years by this point. He's done some stuff, but what has happened, man? What has gone wrong with Trump? Obviously the Iran war, obviously the Epstein files, but the deportations, like all this other stuff he ran on, is also being shuffled off to the side. Are they trying to lose? That's what a lot of people are thinking, and I'm kind of on their side. I think they're trying to destroy the Republican Party. What's your take on how we've gone so wrong so fast?
That's a really, really hard question to answer, because I didn't believe Trump was going to do all the things he said anyway. Again, I don't believe in like unilateral executive authority, so I have that going for me. But I do think that you can focus on priorities and you can hone them in and you can just hammer them. If you just stay in the lane of these are the things I'm really good at, this is what I want to happen, then maybe you move some needles forward. What I'm hearing is, Fox News is soft peddling amnesty now.
Yep.
I heard Stephen Miller go on and do an interview with Brett Baer and not deny that they were going to do amnesty, but he was phrasing it in a way that might be palatable. So, if you make 20 promises to people, then you've given me a rubric by which I can judge you. And this is what I continue to hammer home. I'm not making up like Kyle Serafin's priority. These are not the InfoWars priority. These are not yours or Alex's or anybody else's priorities. This is the Trump administration platform. This is what they ran on. So they promised a number of things. And if you give up on number two on the list, if you did number one, and good to them, they get total credit for shutting down the border. By the way, that was problem. That was solution number one. We need to, stop the border, stop the spread. For me, that's like a tourniquet on a bad bleed where we want to like stop the hemorrhaging. Fine. Great. They did that. The problem is it was done by executive, which means it can be reversed the second somebody else comes in.
Yeah.
But the number two priority should have been like the entire work, like mobilize every single part of the federal government to do this. It's go ahead and get rid of all the people. The largest deportation operation in American history means that you got to do something. That's a wartime footing. We don't have time for war with Iran. Yeah. If you're trying to do a wartime footing deportation of 20, 30 million people out of this country. And by the way, I think a lot of people wanted that. I think people on the left and the right wanted that. Because that also solves the things below it, which was end inflation and make America affordable again and fix some of the housing problems. It allows you to take away some of the resources from weaponized government, which was a problem. It takes us out of the foreign wars situation because we don't have the energy, the resources, or the bandwidth to handle it. So everybody's got to ask the question, why on earth are they focusing on different priorities? And then you get stories like what happened with Joe Kent, where he came out. You remember, we've already moved on from that news cycle. Like, you and I live in this cycle. And it feels like that was months ago. It was only a few days ago,
right,
that somebody from the Trump administration, a lot of somebodies, said that the former director of the National Counterterrorism Center was leaking classified information to journalists and the FBI was investigating him. And then what? You remember when he was arrested the other week?
Yeah, yeah. No, it just turned out it never even existed.
Right. So there's a couple of things that could have happened. Either we're doing smears on people because they're just saying stuff like, hey, maybe we shouldn't be in a war that Israel seems to have started, seems to have pushed us into. And by the way, that's not my words. It's not even Joe Kent's words. That's the Secretary of State, the Speaker of the House, and the President of the United States who said those things. I just listened to him again this morning. Yeah. I went back and played their words and they were like, yeah, Israel was going to make an attack. Any counterattack was going to come back on us. So we decided to attack first. It's like, why don't we just get out of the way? We could have just not been there when the punch came. Why didn't we tell our greatest ally to not do that stuff? That would have been good too. It's like, sorry, we'd love to help you. We want to see you guys succeed. We're really busy here. We have 20 million people that came into this country. And for all the talk about amnesty, which is like, well, we want the hard workers and the people who have jobs. If you are in this country illegally and you have a job, you are breaking the law.
Right.
And how did you get it? Are you using somebody's social security number? Because that's not a victimless crime, it turns out. Have you stolen from like one of my children and are you abusing their credit record? Because all of these things have follow on crimes and we're acting like there's no victim of it. But the victim is the American people. It's the school system that's overburdened. It's the housing system where I have to pay more in rent because somebody else is competing for it and they'll live five families to a house.
Yep.
And I've served those search warrants. You know, Harrison, I've been on the search warrant where you see people from the third world that live like third world people in our very nice neighborhoods. And somebody's house is run down full of like 25 or 30 occupants and they're dividing off like living rooms with a laundry line and a sheet hanging in there. And when you come in through the door, you're like, what in the fresh hell is this?
Yeah.
There's 35 people living in a 3-bedroom house where one family is meant to live. And so they're degrading the American experience. We don't have time for other stuff outside of it. Like that's why the domestic agenda was a success in the election, I think.
And man, you know, there's videos out, yesterday saying that 13,000 people have been killed by illegal immigrants. 13,000. It's like the second most common form of murder is an illegal alien killing an American. Just something insane. So like that's like very tangible, direct damage being done to the American people. Man, you talk about kids. I talk a lot about this school in Austin that brought in a bunch of Afghan refugees to the point where they started teaching the class in Pashtun. So the American kids, I mean, you're robbing them of education in their most important developmental time. That is beyond like just some, you know, stealing a little bit of money. You're actually robbing their life of its potential. It is insane how damaging this is to America. And then you have stories like this from today. The U.S. is short 10 million houses. Well, we have about 50 million people that shouldn't be here. So do we have 10 million house shortage or do we have an excess of 30 million and 50 million, you know, illegals living here? Everything would get better. It really is the fix everything switch, deportations. And we have abandoned that. Trump has abandoned
that. If nothing else, I used to have this conversation with gun control people, and I'm like a big firearms rights guy. I just don't even think that there should be any infringements. I don't care if you own a machine gun or a bazooka. Like none of that bothers me. And I think that's the way it ought to be. So it's like, I'm happy to talk about gun control with people that want us not to have guns. And I have a bunch of them and it would be like a big imposition and it would really restrict my freedom. I'm happy to when we've removed every other important, foreseeable and preventable cause of death in front of it.
Right.
When you stop having people die from obesity and, you know, the CHF and COPDs and diabetes. And when you stop seeing people fall apart from all the preventable things that are in nutrition and you've basically stopped accidental death, which is a big thing. And so, you know, you've fixed all the safety issues out there and we've gotten down to the, you know, few thousand people a year that are killed with firearms. And you want to come and you say, hey, like you're the last thing keeping society from being safe.
Right.
I'd be like, all right, like I'm willing to have the conversation with you at that point. I'm not sure I'm going to agree, but at least I'll be in good faith saying, well, at least you've handled all the stuff in front of it. We have the single biggest cause of problems. You have a burden of 20, maybe 30, whatever million people. You say 50. I don't know that you're wrong. If there's 50 million people putting pressure on our food markets, on our cost of fuel, on our commutes as we drive. Remember, there were all those stories about whenever ICE would show up in town in Los Angeles and suddenly there was like no commute traffic.
No traffic. Crazy.
How is that possible? So you think about that. Then you think about the dilution of what's going on for your children in the schools and the amount of attention that needs to go to people who don't speak English as a first language. And then the Afghan story is actually really poignant to me because one of my whistleblowing activities was going to Congress in 2022. And I pointed out my time on the Afghan refugee bases out at Fort Bliss, which is near El Paso, and the other one that's out by Las Cruces. It's called Holloman Air Force Base. It's out by Alamogordo. And I spent, there's 10,000 Afghans that came into each one of those. So 20,000 of the 100,000 Afghans came into my little area when I was working for the FBI. And what I saw was absolutely radicalizing. What I realize is none of these people got a briefing about, like, welcome to the United States, here's the rules.
Right.
They didn't necessarily know what they were signing on to come to. They just showed up here because they got on a plane because they knew they didn't want to be where they were and they wanted to go somewhere else, but they didn't know what the requirement was. And so when you're in a space where you don't even know what the rules are, you're now diluting to the tune of like 100,000 people, people who have no language, no culture, and no understanding of what our morals are and what our mores are. So they just acted with impunity. And so, like, that's just a huge drain on law enforcement and our safety, too.
And we're paying for it. It'd be totally different if they were coming over with $1 million each and wanted to build up America together. No, we have to pay for it. We give them jobs. We teach them the kids. It's ridiculous. We'll be right back.
I know you're the big health guy. You're way better shape than I am. Don't kick my ass. I've seen you working out with the Liver King. You say you've taken methylene before. I want you to take our medical grade. Take 30 minutes to kick in. So good for your body. I'd like you to drink this, Jay. You said earlier, what? I appreciate it. I want to get your true review. If it doesn't work, tell me. Here it is, brother.
Cheers.
It looks just like the stuff from Dune, the water of life. He's drinking the juice of a strangled, drowned sandworm right now. Baron Harkonnen is not happy. We're going to see what happens.
20 minutes later.
I feel like my brain is clearer and working faster. It feels like my brain and my energy have had the accelerator hit on them. I felt it in my brain and my energy.
Well,
I like it. I'm going to get me some before I leave.
We're going to give you a couple bottles of it, bro. We love it. It's amazing. Get yours now. TheAlexShowStore.com. Our medical grade USP ultramethylene blue, exclusively at TheAlexShowStore.com, has taken the country by storm. You've seen the rave reviews. All of our guests that have taken it have been blown away. Zen, clarity, focus, like a fog has lifted. It's not a stimulant, but it feels like one with no letdown. But the best part is it's so good for your cells, so good for your mitochondria. It's incredible. Now we have it in sealed capsules with organic vitamin C to supercharge it as well. Get a 1 month supply so you can travel with it. Talk to your physicians before you take it because it's very, very powerful. It can interact with some drugs. But after you've done your research, get your ultramethylene blue either in liquid or now in capsules exclusively at TheAlexShowStore.com and it funds our operations. And if you subscribe, you can lock in 50% off right now on all future orders and cancel anytime. Take action now at TheAlexShowStore.com. Become a subscriber and lock in 50% off on top of the already incredible savings. TheAlexShowStore.com is the destination of health, liberty, and freedom.
I want to make a massive announcement right now. I mean, this is just bonker town. What it does is just... I feel 20 years younger. I'm not kidding you. Ultra Methylene Blue. Blue.
I know. Blue. I love it. This stuff works, man.
I just can't shut up about it. Up about it. Up about it. Up about it. Ultra Methylene Blue. 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 I mean, this is just bonker town. I just can't shut up about it, up about it, up about it. Ultra Methylene Blue, 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 blue. I just can't shut up about it, up about it, up about it, up about it. Get yours now at TheAlexShowStore.com. It is just beyond spectacular.
Hey Chase, good to talk to you again. I wanted to do a quick plug on the methylene blue, on the long-term effects that it had on me. Back in 2020, I got COVID. My brother and my dad both have eczema. After I got COVID, it must have, it opened that dormant cell in my body or whatever. So I've been dealing with eczema ever since 2020. And the long-term effects of the methylene blue, 99% gone.
That's absolutely incredible. I'm so happy. Have your relatives tried it too to see the same effect?
I have been trying to get my brother to take it and he's skeptical, but I'll tell you what, I got 4 bottles sitting on my table. I think I'm just going to give him one. And I think if I just give it to him, I think he'll eventually try it.
Yeah, that's a good move.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones.
Do
discover trends and global developments years before they happen, right here on The Alex Jones Show.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, joined today by Kyle Serafin. You can follow him on X at Kyle Serafin. Today only, you're getting 60% off all InfoWars branded products on thealexjonesstore.com. Like I said, you've probably heard the term last chance a lot on this show. Last chance to take advantage of a sale, last chance to win a prize, whatever it is. This is your last chance ever to get official InfoWars branded merchandise. We are shutting down. We will not be able to use the logo anymore. We will not be able to sell merchandise with that logo anymore. So if you want authentic, official InfoWars merchandise, you gotta get it now. We make it easy by giving you 60% off. So today only, all InfoWars products, 60% off. T-shirts and hats are under 16 bucks. The InfoWars cooler bundle is a fantastic deal, especially if you're a VIP member, which everybody should be. Just go now, go today, because you're quickly running out of time. And hell, even if you just buy it to put it in a safe and sell it in 25 years, these will become collector's items. TheAlexJonesStore.com, TheAlexJonesStore.com/Harrison, if you want to let them know who sent you. Now, Kyle Serafin is my guest, and I know there's a lot going on these days. Trump is losing favorability sort of across the board, but especially with his most important base, people like non-college educated white people, collapsing in polls for their support of Trump. They're not the only ones. Support for Israel is collapsing, and that plays directly into why they're so desperate to get the Iran war done and finished and totally collapse Iran. It's one of the reasons why they really, really don't want a ceasefire, because they have destroyed their reputation overseas. They've destroyed their reputation in America, and it might not be this year, but in 5-10 years, that means the American government's going to be anti-Israel, meaning we're not going to support them, meaning they're going to be on their own, surrounded by enemies. This is an existential crisis for Israel. Can you explain this to us, Kyle?
I think regular people who don't care otherwise. You said that he's losing parts of his base, and that's probably true too. But the biggest thing that Donald Trump is hemorrhaging right now are regular people that aligned with him temporarily. There's an article in Axios, which I'm told Trump reads Axios every morning. That's the first thing he goes to. So I had somebody kind of explain that to me. So I look at Axios every day. And the lead story was the size of the shrinking tent. If you remember the way that Donald Trump wrote in, first of all, it was those 20 core promises. I keep them on my desktop at all times now. I just refer to them. And by the way, having no new wars, that was on there. It turns out that was number 8 on the core promises. It was in the top 10. Pretty simple. But the incredible shrinking tent, the way they described the actual sort of coalition that came together to put Donald Trump into office, they described it as a once in a generation opportunity. This is my frustration. I've had people complain like, oh, you're a whiner, you're crying. It's like, no. Don't get that wrong. I didn't ever have any kind of faith in Donald Trump. I don't have faith in men in general, and certainly not in politicians. He's been in politics 10 years. He's a politician. Let's call him what he is. But I did want him to do some things, and he did a couple of them, and I should be grateful. Like, guys like Owen Schroyer are not in prison, and their felonies are wiped out. My buddy Steve Baker is not in prison. Enrique Tarrio, Joe Biggs, not in prison. That's all good stuff. I was into that. That happened day one, so very good.
Yep.
But I also wanted the rest of it. I wanted as many of that 20. I thought if we got maybe 40 or 50%, we'd be in pretty good shape. And we got like one or two of them. And that's not great. You know, I just paid my taxes yesterday, and I was told by a credible authority who ran for president that we were going to get rid of the IRS and fund it with tariffs.
Yeah,
I was surprised to find the IRS is still in business and still taking my check yesterday.
Yeah, I think I remember that as well. Should we just go through this list? Because we got it right here. It's the Agenda 47 list that they came out with. It's the 20 promises to the American people. Seal the border and stop the migrant invasion. I'd say he did that. He did seal the border. But obviously H-1Bs, like, that's a whole different issue. Number two, carried
600,000 Chinese students reauthorized. I mean, there's holes in it. But generally speaking, the border part, the porous border on the southern end of the border specifically, was handled properly. So kudos where it's due. Yes.
And of course, that just proves that it being open was a choice that the Biden administration made, which would lead to perhaps treason charges for them if we ever got around to charging the deep state. Let's see if that's on the list. Number two
There's two pieces to that, though. Let me just hone in on that one more time, because this is also relevant. Not only does it prove that it's an executive decision, so just the will of the president was enough to change it, which is what they were saying the whole time. It also proves that there's no fix being done legislatively, which means that the Republican House and Senate that are not taking this up are the problem. And so, 100%. You know, like every single silver lining also has sort of the darkness on the inside of it. That's right. The dark part of it.
Right. And hey, don't get me wrong. I blame the Republican Party just as much as I blame Trump, mm-hmm. the person. It's like, you know, they have completely and utterly failed up and uphold their end of the bargain as well. And it's 100%. Just stupid overall because they're not going to get elected. Like they're going to lose the power they love so much because they refuse to just do what the American people want. It's just, there's no making sense of it at all. But of course, number two is carry out the largest deportation operation in history. Not even close, Kyle.
Nope. Not even close. Not even like to the point where I've got friends that are working with ICE right now. They're federal agents that are working on joint task forces. And they said if they did what they do every single day in every city in America with the staffing that they had and no new people came in and they just pursued the stacks they had, they'd be doing it for 10 to 15 years. We're not even close to operating that way. And of course, we only have, this is the sad thing. You mentioned that it feels like it's really long in the administration, even though it's only 1 year in. This is the way that the game of politics is played for anybody who pays attention. You get 2 year cycles, which means you have to have enough progress by year one to be able to get the next 2 years to go with you if you're on a 4 year election term. Obviously, the members of Congress that are doing every 2 years, that's different. But when we start talking about the executive, you get 2 years to show that you have enough traction. But in order to get those second 2 years, you got to win the first quarter to be able to be allowed to play the second half. Otherwise, you get mercy ruled. And in the case of Donald Trump, we've already seen if you don't win and you don't hold on to the House, you get impeached. If you don't hold on to the Senate, they may actually throw you out, which is even wilder. But the game has gotten so much more radical because we're not playing by the old rules where people used to do that, where they were sort of a gentleman's agreement. In my lifetime, we used to give the president 100 days where they would get their agenda to move as fast as they could to see what they could do with it. And everybody would operate in good faith. In my lifetime, you used to get 90 to 95, maybe 98% of the senators to confirm the cabinet because everybody agreed this is a president. He was elected. He's allowed to have the people representing him in his cabinet that he wants.
Yep.
And all we need to do is make sure they're not like, you know, foreign spies or some sort of traitorous people with some huge deep secrets in their background. We don't do that anymore. We're passing cabinet members 51-49.
Yeah.
I mean, we're so contentious that we're not even operating on the system. I actually think the system is so weighted by the inefficiencies and sort of the non-functionality of it at this point that it's kind of inevitable that it doesn't survive indefinitely. I just don't know how long that is. And I don't think that means the world ends. I think it means that we end up maybe closer to what America was designed to be, which is a confederation of states where the most important government is actually in your state capital and not in Washington, D.C. That was the way we were designed. That's why it's called the United States of America, not like some other thing, the Republic of America, right?
Yeah.
It's the United States. We're supposed to all have states that we answer to. So anyway, watching all of that stuff and the way that the game has gone so radical in probably the last 20 years since I've actually been paying attention, it's really bad. I mean, it's really bad, but in the end, it actually may end up being kind of a silver lining as well. It's like, I don't think the system was designed that way. I don't think anybody that's in office is guilty of causing the system to be the way it is. I think most of these things go back to the early 1900s, like turn of the century. Yep. So we're talking about 1908, 1913 era.
Yep.
There's some real strong ones that happened in the 1940s as well. And so Congress stopped doing their job 75 years ago, 80 years ago. You know, we gave central power to the United States federal government in 1913, and we broke the systems that we have. I mean, most people don't realize this, but like you weren't even designed to be able to pick your president. It wasn't supposed to be that important. It really just wasn't. And you weren't supposed to be able to pick your senator for sure.
Right. That was 1913, the 17th Amendment. Probably the most important year in American history was 1913. And my belief is the income tax. It was everything happened in 1913. Yeah, of course, the next year we go to World War One and the 17th Amendment. People don't understand this. It used to be that your senator was appointed by your state's legislature. So you would vote for your local representative to go to, in my case, the Capitol in Austin. And then they, representing me, would choose a senator to send to Washington. And they would recall the senator if he wasn't doing well. But 1913, the 17th Amendment made it then a popularity contest, which is a lot easier to rig. One big statewide contest is a lot easier to rig than 100 localities to steal a whole state legislature. So it made it a lot easier to rig and a lot more democratic, which I'm against as a Republican. I don't want democracy.
Yeah, no, democracy is the enemy 100%. And it was the enemy that the founders saw as a problem. Like if you look at what that actually did, and this is such a mechanism that people don't necessarily grasp, and it's pedantic, but it's so important because the system has been broken since before anybody who's alive today voting could have been responsible. So I don't blame boomers and I don't blame the greatest generation or the silent generation or any of them. And like they weren't old enough to make these decisions. Those people are all long gone at this point, but it's worth looking at the mechanism. What we had then was a distilling of the popular sentiment. So as you voted, you know, I'm in Texas too. So we vote our people to be in Austin. Austin has a red legislature, even though they're like real squishy and a lot of stuff. They still were Republicans. So if we wanted a red state representation in the state houses, then we would get theoretically the same senator that would go and represent them. But it distilled what it came down to. So we all voted for our local representation, which is in a small little district of people that we would theoretically know, people that I run around with and, you know, in my county, in Williamson County. We would put somebody into to the state legislature, and then that sentiment would get distilled. Not like drinking a beer, but like drinking a shot. And so you would get whatever the strongest version of that is to be sent off. And if you look at the way that the state houses are divided across this country, you would have a supermajority. It wouldn't always be red in this country because we've changed differently and the dynamics have changed, but it would be a supermajority of state houses represented in the Senate. And then you would have functionality. You actually would, instead of it being a 59, you know, a 51-49 split where we're maybe getting someone not showing up and having the vice president come in and break a tie. It should have not been that difficult to be able to pass actual legislation when it mattered. Instead, yeah. What we have is this series of compromises. And so they have to make new rules about, oh, if it's about money, which we have to spend because God forbid we go without a budget. By the way, my favorite times are when the government shut down.
Oh my God. They're my favorite. Couple of months, we got to go through that rigmarole. It's exhausting.
But here's the thing that it proves. Most people, and I remind people on this on my daily podcast when we do it, it's like, listen, you know that the federal government shut down? Oh, you didn't know because the stoplights all work and when you turn on the gas at your house, it's still functional and you flush the toilet and it still goes somewhere. And if you have a problem with your internet, there's a guy that comes out. Like the world still keeps turning because we're actually not Washington DC centric, even though a lot of politics ends up going there because that's where the big money comes from. It's such a dysfunctional group that when they don't go to work, nobody notices.
Yeah.
They just spend, you know, whatever, $7 trillion a year to let us know that they own us, but not in any meaningful way, because the minute they stop going to work, nobody cares. And it doesn't affect your life or my life or anybody that's listening's life, unless you work for the federal government, obviously.
Or unless they want you to feel it by making the airport lines 4 hours long by shutting down TSA. Yeah.
It's literally the only time most people interact with the federal government. Like if you guys sat there and thought about it, you interact with the IRS when you call for help on your taxes and they don't answer the phone. So that's cool. And then you interact with them at a TSA and that's basically just theater. I mean, you can look at the old red cell test they used to do. They would sneak 95% of the weapon components that they wanted to get through to the point where classic government answer. And I know this from talking to people that were in DHS and that were part of the Air Marshals program and so on. They didn't fix the security of TSA when they were having really, really bad red cell tests where they would be able to penetrate with bomb components and weapons and so on. They just stopped publishing the results and stopped doing the red cell because it was really damning. That's the world we live in right now. It's like, hey, there's a problem. What's the problem? People know that we suck. Okay, well, what can we do? We could suck less, or we could just stop telling people and stop testing to find out if we suck.
That basically like answers like 90% of the problems in the world. I mean, literally, anything you apply it to, that is the truth. I mean, look at Europe. It's like, do you solve the problem with migrants causing violence, or do you silence the people complaining about it? Every time they will silence people complaining about it because they like the problem. They want the problems. It's actually, that's the point. The point of a system is what it does, and that's what it always does. So it's not a coincidence that they keep doing it. It's just, it's hard for people to understand, I guess.
It's also, as we go through these, and we'll get to one of them about election security, which, by the way, if you were going to tell me the central promises that I walked away with when I was voting, and I'm not a Republican, and I'm an independent that's very conservative and generally leans towards Republicans because there's not a better option most of the time. So those are the people that are walking away from this coalition in droves, the big tent that was talked about in Axios, the people that really wanted conservatism, knowing that Donald Trump is a 90s Democrat. He's not a conservative. He's never been a conservative. He's a feminist, first of all. So that doesn't make any sense. He's basically like a little bit left of Bill Clinton, which is not a terrible place to be. The 90s were pretty good. So for whatever people like to say that he is or he is not, I don't think he's religious. I don't think there's any evidence of that. He was asked about the Bible. He doesn't even know whether the first half or the second half is the better half. He doesn't know anything about any of the stuff he's supposed to know about if he was a quote unquote conservative. But that's not problematic for the average person. What's problematic is if you make promises like everything is contingent on me getting rid of the people that are causing the prices to be jacked up, which is illegal aliens. And that's a simple solution. Like it's complicated, but it's a simple like problem target set. And then the other piece of it is election security. Because apparently we don't have secure elections, but you really want me to go out and vote? Like, I'm not even sure I'm going to vote in national stuff. I'm probably going to leave the national stuff off and I'm going to vote in the things that happen in my county and for my school board and for the municipality I live in. Those probably matter on the outside chance those actually work. But I saw someone say the other day that voting in America in 2026 is the adult equivalent of writing a letter to Santa Claus.
It's hard to disagree with that. I mean, but
it
you're exactly.
Stings.
But it's like these are the root problems, and we can point to all these other things going on, but it's like, how did we get there? Illegal aliens, driving up prices, driving down wages, et cetera, not being able to actually trust our vote and actually get people that we want in power. If we can solve those things, a lot of other problems get solved automatically downstream, but we've not put the focus into that, and the blame I would put squarely on Trump and the Congress, because it's the Congress's prerogative. And Congress seems happy to give up their power. I mean, they're supposed to be the ones to dictate whether or not we go into war. They have completely abandoned that responsibility, and they're happy to sit on the sidelines as Donald Trump does an extended military excursion or whatever label they're putting on it now. So it's not even that it's a battle between the founders thought that people would be jealous of their power and they would want to defend it. And, oh, the executive's trying to, you know, move in on our territory. They don't care. They're happy to let the executive take it, and they can, do whatever Eric Swalwell gets up to.
They also assume that people would have actual businesses outside of just being True. Some sort of congressman who leverages the power that they have and the access and the information. They actually have recesses built in so people could go back and check on their businesses, because when this country was set up, the people that went out there and were serving in government, it probably was a real imposition to their lives. It really was service as opposed to what, you know, now people talk about public service. I used to hate that when I was in the military. They'd be like, oh, thank you for your service. I'm like, you know, they pay us, right? Like, it was a voluntary transaction. I showed up and I enlisted, and I took a huge pay cut when I did. I went from working in corporate finance to being an enlisted guy. I went from like $100,000 a year to like $18,000 a year. But I did it voluntarily. Like, no one made me do it. I wanted to, and I was excited about the transaction that I was involved. I was going to do training, hang out with people. You know, it's a very interesting experience. And so it was worth it for me. The idea that people are like giving up so much to go be members of Congress, then why are all the dirtbags who basically either one of two things, either they're super wealthy and they're going to defend their wealth, that seems like a fair number, or the people that really aspire to like get to the next level and they're dirtbags and they do dirtbag things and they have no problem. It's actually not that hard to be uber wealthy in America if you have no scruples and if you have no moral compass. That turns out, I know lots of people, I'm sure you do too. You're like, yeah, I could do that too if I had no scruples.
Yeah.
It'd be easy.
Yeah, no, it seems to be like the only way to get ahead now. It seems like if you're honest and trustworthy and a decent person, you're just a sucker at this. You're an idiot, because the dude down the road just, you know, pretending to create daycares, he's getting $50 million from the government. You're the idiot who's working 9 to 5 and paying your taxes, you moron. I mean, that really goes to the heart of it as well, right? We actually built a country that was dependent on self-sacrifice and like just trustworthiness. We have all these vulnerabilities that make life good, because you don't want to live in a prison. But if you let people take advantage of those vulnerabilities, they have to go away, and suddenly we're locking up the deodorant in the CVS aisle. So it's like we are losing the really precious part of our civilization, which is trust. And trustworthiness, and that's like being deliberately driven out in favor of just schemes and scams and con artists everywhere.
It's almost like you're describing a nation that has Christian principles would be sort of a superior thing. The upside of being people who live in a nation that used to have Christian principles and are clearly deluding, and you could look at the numbers in 1970, like 90% of America identified as Christian of some denomination. Today it's like closer to 60%, but we're still the majority, and there's obviously a major influx of people that don't. The upside of being a Christian is that you're not actually theoretically living for this world. So it turns out that's actually okay. The scammer will get theirs at some point. If they want the reward on here on earth, that's what they're going for. So you couldn't talk me into doing something that's unscrupulous and try to live, because I don't want to live with that. I don't want to set that example for my children. Many of those people don't have kids, I've noticed too. Yeah. It's very interesting the number of people that have either no or very few children that are looking out there, and they're looking like, how do I get mine right now so that I can be Lord of the Ashes? Well, I'm like, my kids are going to be warlords of whatever you leave,
right?
Because they're going to be functional, well-adjusted people who have skill sets that are, you know, tangible. I've got my 8-year-old daughter moving a lawnmower around with me last night, because I was like, yeah, you want to learn how to push the lawnmower and how to use the self-drive propel? It's a little bit too much for her because it's a little heavy and she's tiny, but she knows how to shoot a gun. She knows how to cook an egg. She knows how to bake a cake. She knows how to do functional things. I would trade that over having $50 million and a bunch of people. I look at my next door neighbors and like they've got my kids essentially in the future working for them, mowing their lawns when they have kids that are old enough to mow their own lawns.
Right.
I wouldn't want that. I wouldn't want to be the person that is unscrupulous or doesn't have the value set, because it's like, look, I get a lot of value about what I do. I don't have to have it in some numerical number. It's all about, are my children going to be awesome people? Are they going to have a good life? And am I going to walk away and know that when I die, I'm leaving something that's better? If you want to be the person that scams everybody, but you're driving around in a Tesla, like, okay, cool, dude, that's you. I wouldn't want to trade places with you. You couldn't talk me into it.
I also don't want to live like Eric Swalwell, just constantly thinking about all the terrible things I've done, and just, you know, I can only imagine every time he gets online, there's a moment of panic where he's like, ooh, is it out yet? Is the truth out yet? Okay, I'm good for another.
It's today the day.
My God, I cannot imagine living with that type. I would, you know, you're gonna spend 10 minutes with some cheap hooker and somehow that's worth a lifetime of like terror that it's gonna be released. It's like, who makes these decisions? It's insane.
Well, it does go to our core nature, which is pretty fallen. I mean, here's the thing, like every man has been on a business trip and had a pretty woman walk by and look at him once and go, and that mind goes like, oh, is that an opportunity? And then you go, is that opportunity really what I'm about? Is it worth anything? And the answer is no, if you're a smart person, or if you live like I do, which is that I assume the government's coming after me, because after I left the FBI, I had surveillance on me when I flew out to go move my stuff out of a storage unit. So I watched government agents follow me. Like, I assume everything. If I get a DM from somebody I don't know, I'm like, what are you trying to pull here?
Right, right.
You know, I got DMs from the Iranian state media. And when I got it, I was like, crap. Not only am I not going to respond to the Iranian state media for whatever reason they thought they were going to talk to me, I also now know the FBI is spying on me and they have access to all my stuff. And what I see, just kind of related to that, think about the fact that we have a Congress right now that wants to push a clean FISA renewal and Donald Trump is behind it. Literally the guy who got to experience FISA being used against his own campaign, and now he's like, oh, FISA's totally good. If people want to know how far we've gone and how far away we've gone from the mark, they can just look at the fact that our Congress went from saying we shouldn't be spied on, we have evidence they spied on us with Arctic Frost, by the way, let's give these same clowns that we haven't done any reform on, let's give them the exact same power that they want, because we should.
Well, it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. Okay, so they've been spying on us, but we want to stop them from spying. But if we try to stop them from spying, then they use the information they got from spying on us. It's a very convenient system the intelligence agencies have here. It's their, the congressmen are now incentivized on their own accord to vote for more and more FISA warrants and surveillance on the American people. It's just absolutely sick. And we hardly got through this list, but I think you make a great point of even just showing this list of going, no, this is what was promised. It's not us. We're not making up what we expected Trump to do. It was laid out in bullet points, 20 of them, saying what the priorities of the Trump administration were going to be. Going to war with Iran is not on here anywhere.
It's
and
not.
A lot of the
no,
stuff
nowhere
Trump's
in there
doing.
To say that we've always been at war with Iran. Nowhere, it turns out.
No,
it's just not there.
So why are they complaining that we're talking about it? That's the real issue. And that's what they want everybody to think, is that it's our fault for talking about it. If we lose the midterms, it's your fault for complaining. No. It's your fault for not following through on your promises.
Well, you guys were touting the low IQ hat, which I think is hilarious. And I love the way that Alex went and responded. You got it. Fantastic. I love the way that Alex was going on and he went with JP Sears and pointed out the fact that it's like, look, you know, I'm going to make light of this. But the real damage comes down to people not doing the thing that they said. And here's how I know that you can't actually change the system. We have a guy right now who's bad mouthing, you know, Alex Jones of all people, and he's bad mouthing him about being a liar. And he left the FBI after 292 days where he was in a senior executive position to actually do real change, to do a podcast. And so you know that podcasts and information is where the battle is actually being waged, because the people that theoretically would be successful are actually going back into podcasts. Mark Levin being touted by the president. There's a reason why they want to target that and why they want to tout certain voices. And it's the reason why President Trump, I think, actually tried to devalue the influence, because it's really obviously there.
I think that's exactly right. I think you're exactly right. They know how powerful we are in their scared. Kyle Serafin, incredible stuff, folks. Stay tuned. More on the other side with Matt Bracken.
Mm-hmm. I've been an oil field for as long as I've been an InfoWarrior, 18 years. And Texan, born and raised, so I know like knives like you do. And I finally broke down and ordered one. I got the neon orange, and I'm blown away. I've had Benchmark knives that are easily $400. Had them for a year, lost them. This thing has the same feel, same quality, same, I mean, everything about it. I haven't had a knife stay this sharp in a long time, and I'm like horrible with equipment. I'm like very abusive with knives at work every day. I'm extremely impressed. I'm very impressed. So anybody out there listening, who knows if there's a knife comes back in stock, get one. You know, any of them. I want to get the ring knife when it comes back out. Other than that, I'll join all the supplements and,
Yeah, particularly the pocket knives, the folding knives, the flip knives are super high quality at incredibly low prices. I mean, these same knives sell in stores all day for like $80 or selling for like $40. We'll be right back. Now, coming up in just the next month or so, it looks like this is finally it. They're finally going to be able to shut down InfoWars, but they won't shut you down as InfoWarriors. And that term and that name lives forever. The InfoWar lives forever. In the potential twilight of InfoWars itself as InfoWars.com, we've launched a limited edition line of the InfoWars 1776 limited edition line. A whole bunch of new shirts, a whole bunch of new hats that are limited edition that take a lot of the classic InfoWars shirts. This is the all-time bestseller, navy blue with red InfoWars on it, and adding on the shoulder 1776. These are historic shirts, and they're symbols of your support and your being part of this operation and helping the operation grow and expand into the future. So take action now at thealexjonesstore.com and look at these two new amazing lines.
Receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
The future is now. Explorers from deep space crash land on a savage planet destined for annihilation.
Abandoned ship! Get out now!
They discover a world so unpredictable, so shocking, it will shatter your very concept of reality and reveal the dark destiny of man.
What alternate universe is this? What planet did I wake up in?
They own the banks, fund the wars, manage the politicians, control the media, and command the apes to enforce their tyranny.
You want to fight? You better believe you've got one!
They tried to silence the one man who saw it coming. And the world he reveals will challenge every idea you've ever had of freedom.
They cut her. Did you know about this?
No, I swear, I never saw that girl before.
But they... You did it. You cut up her brain, you bloody baboon. Take your stinking paws off me, you damn 38.
Prepare yourself for the most shocking ending in the history of motion pictures.
I've terrified you from the beginning, and I still do. You're afraid of me, and you hate me. Why?
Because you're a menace to our globalist plan. Be careful what you find, Alex. You might not like what you see.
Oh my God. You actually did it.
You activated the Great Reset, you maniacs! You blew it up! God damn you! Damn you all to hell!
The Alex Jones Show, the most banned broadcast on the planet.
Hello, there's going to be something a little bit different on today, in the fourth hour. I'm going to be talking to the notorious, the one and the only, man who has certainly, done the time, not sure about the crime, but, that would be Victor Boot, who I think is now safely back in Mother Russia and not in a, Supermax prison somewhere. I would say it's better to be back in Russia. And I'm 10 years older than you. I was born in 1957. So I was always fascinated with the dark arts. I was a Navy Spetsnaz, Navy SEAL in my youth. That's how I paid for a university. I was a Russian studies major. So now, ya ochen chelovyek. I'm an old guy now. But when I was in the 80s and in that era, I studied very closely some interesting characters of those times. There was a Canadian named Gerald Bull. He invented very long-range howitzers that he sold to the South Africans with the blessing of the CIA, and it just goes to show that if you trust those bastards, sooner or later the political winds change and you wind up in jail. And in the case of Gerald Bull, he wound up with the Mossad killing him in the Netherlands. So it's better to be in Russia than in the ground. And then there was another one of my favorites who wrote a couple of really excellent books. Cannot recommend them highly enough. Michael Mad Mike Hoare, who is a South African mercenary leader, fought in the Congo in the 60s, was involved in a couple of attempted coups, also spent some years in jail. And he recently died in 2020 at the age of 101. So this guy who, going back to the 50s and 60s, was an amazing adventurer, just wild cowboy around the world, Mike Hoare, lived to be over 100. So he really broke the mold there. And then some guys I'm not so crazy about. There was Frank Turpel and Ed Wilson, who were affiliated with the CIA.
Our medical-grade USP ultramethylene blue, exclusively at thealexshowstore.com, has taken the country by storm. You've seen the rave reviews. All of our guests that have taken it have been blown away. Zen, clarity, focus, like a fog has lifted. It's not a stimulant, but it feels like one with no letdown. But the best part is it's so good for your cells, so good for your mitochondria. It's incredible. Now we have it in sealed capsules with organic vitamin C to supercharge it as well. Get a one-month supply so you can travel with it. Talk to your physicians before you take it, because it's very, very powerful. It can interact with some drugs. But after you've done your research, get your ultramethylene blue either in liquid or now in capsules exclusively at thealexshowstore.com, and it funds our operations. And if you subscribe, you can lock in 50% off right now on all future orders and cancel anytime. Take action now at thealexshowstore.com. Become a subscriber and lock in 50% off on top of the already incredible savings. Thealexshowstore.com is the destination of health, liberty, and freedom.
Listening to an Infowars.com frontline report. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. Sorry about that choppy outro there to the break that I completely missed. But you know, I'm wearing this shirt today in honor of our guest, my guest of Victor Boot, and it says at the bottom, celebrate diversity. It has like 16 pistols on it. So it's my celebrate diversity t-shirt, because I think you can say that we both have a love of guns and what you can do with guns and travel and adventure. And I have never been arrested by the CIA or put in jail. So we don't have that in common, but I did all that as like a long intro, because I've always been, I'm a novelist. I write just crazy books, right? But I try to keep it real. But I've always been fascinated with these international mavericks, these guys that don't fit the mold, that break free, like, outlaw bikers or pirates in the old days. That have their own moral code, and it may not be one that everybody on Fox News would agree with, but have their own loyalty to their own country, their own friends, and there's certainly something to say to that, and I'm and I'm glad that you're free. And with that, we can discuss anything at all.
Okay, great to have you, Matt. You know, it's a pleasure for me to speak to you and all your audience. Well, the one small update, I was not arrested by CIA, but by DEA, because accordingly the rumors I heard while I've been in a lockup, CIA refused to go after me because they have nothing on me. So they called the dirty, you know, staff masters, DEA, who are specialized in a, you know, a sting operation and all dirty jobs. Unfortunately, absolutely right. You know, in all the good times, 80s and 90s, at least there is, was a certain respect or professionalism of, you know, whether the CIA operatives and their counterparts from Russia, from other countries. I myself grew up reading the books of the French novelist Gérard de Villiers. He wrote like over 400, you know, novels, basically based about, you know, spy story. And you couldn't believe when I was in the Bangkok jail, you know, one day somebody shows up to visit me. So I'm coming there. There is an old bald man sitting, giving me his card. I'm looking on it. And I was like, wow, are you the same writer who wrote this, you know, SIS series? He said, yes, because his hero was one of the Austrian CIA, you know, noble spy who been going to every country and, you know, having some adventures. Where he was good is about his book you can use as a basically, you know, manual about this historical geopolitical situation and struggle is usually between bad guys, the either the Soviets or somebody else. And, you know, all his 400 books been covering basically since 60s. Can you believe he died like, what, maybe 8 years ago? Because when he visited me with his wife, and he came several times, you know, to visit me, so we have a very lengthy discussion. For me, it was very fun, because for me, he was a great source of that kind of the geopolitical, you know, stories from within, you know, presented through this, of course, novel. It was always a little bit sex there too, like James Bond. And, you know, once I told him, oh, look, everything is fine. You're doing fantastic job, but why are you adding on every book such kind of the, you know, even improper sometimes, you know, obscene scenes with the sex? I said, Victor, sorry, but how am I going to sell them? If there is no sex in the books, so nobody will buy them.
I'm so envious of somebody who can write so many novels. You know, I've written right. 6 long full length novels, but I'm very slow. I get off the track. But there's so much that can be truthful that's in novels, much better than the dry position papers that academics put out. You know, guys that go to conferences, or maybe they were colonel or a Navy captain. And some of these people on Fox News, I just wonder what life did they live that they're such idiots that they can be considered experts. And they're saying basically gravity doesn't exist, or 2 + 2 = 17, you know, and they're considered experts. And you see a lot of very true things in novels that are written by some people that are, old former spooks or former, commando types. That for me, it's, made me very interested in writing very realistic novels. You know, one of my favorite movies this is from the 70s, I think. It was a novel, I think it was called 7 Days of the Condor. It was made into a film with Robert Redford called 3 Days of the Condor. Mm-hmm. And Navy SEALs liked it because he used Ingram MAC-10 in this. And the MAC-10 was a real piece of crap, square block, blowback machine gun with a big suppressor. And in that movie, a man dressed as a mailman comes into a CIA safe house in a New York City apartment and shoots everybody with a MAC-10. And the SEALs always loved that. We always said the MAC-10 is the best submachine gun for a shootout inside a telephone booth. Also can use as an anchor or to drive in tent stakes. You know, equally good. But, in this in this movie, Robert Redford is a CIA analyst at a proprietary cover business where they read all the books. This is before computers could do this automatically. So they're reading all spy novels and they're compressing them into the gist of the story and trying to find if codes are being sent out through novels that these can be distributed, you know, worldwide as just fiction, but maybe they're giving messages to agents. So I always thought that movie was fascinating because in that book in the early 70s, they're saying we have to even read the fiction novels about spies and spooks and commandos because sometimes they're written under a pseudonym by former spies to avoid their non-disclosure agreements that they sign when they leave CIA or other situations, and they're not supposed to talk about their former life. So they write a novel, and the novel has more information in it than if they wrote a paper and tried to publish it. But anyway, that's why I was really hooked on the idea of finding truth inside of fiction novels.
Yeah,
maybe you should
write
a book.
You know, our brain is basically, you know, built in such a way we cannot even imagine in a wild imagination nothing unless we saw it. So we are, as a human beings, we can't just, you know, made up the thing because there is, you know, all the bricks of your fantasy, they're still in the real life. So you're absolutely right. If you are a proper analyst, you can go through the novel and basically pick up very important parts of information. That's, you know, what was, you know, important. You're absolutely right. You know, there is a kind of we're losing the, I don't know what it is, IQ, or if you see for last 30, 40, 50 years, there is this decline of the, you know, it's like affecting worldwide, especially it's seen in America in the movies. We don't see any more movies with the proper, you know, heroes or anti-heroes like used to be with the Steve Seagal. By the way, I just recently was with him because he is also in Russia. Maybe one of these days we can also, you know, bring him to the show and discuss his all good times. And for me, he was kind of always that, you know, master, you know, martial arts and, you know, his movies where he would be very agile.
Who is he you're talking about?
It's a Steve Seagal.
Oh, Seagal, sure. Steve. Yeah. He's like pretty heavy now. He's put on some weight. But for real, he went to Japan. For true actual story, he went to Japan at the lowest level, like I washed the dojo. You know, I cleaned the floor of the dojo and live full immersion, learn Japanese, learn Aikido, which is a fantastic martial art. You know, it's not to turn that into a martial arts story, but I have a lot of respect for Aikido because it's not a sparring sport. You know, you don't spar in Aikido, but if somebody comes behind you and grabs your shoulder, you know, you just are going to react and deal with the guy right away, instinctively. Right. And you know, it's related, of course, to jiu-jitsu and other martial arts, but yeah, Steven Seagal is legit. And he is also somebody, and I know others that have moved to Russia because, you know, this is what they call some Russians refer to as the Third Rome. This is a very old concept. Even I was a Russian studies major in university in the 70s. And the concept of Third Rome is Rome in Italy is First Rome. Then Orthodox Rome, Constantinople, and then the St. Cyril and the monks come to Moscow, and that Moscow as a third Rome is the final Rome that saves the West, that preserves the Christian culture through Orthodoxy, while, Constantinople falls to the Turks, the Muslims, and Rome, of course, falls into decadence and corruption. The, you know, popes who are maybe, there's two popes at a time, or a pope with, you know, girlfriends. I mean, we're talking old history, but that the pure faith comes to Russia. And you can see this even today. You can watch videos on YouTube. The Russian military cathedral outside of Moscow. I recommend people look at this. Can you imagine the United States building a military cathedral? I mean, it's a concept that you can't even comprehend in the USA or Europe now. A military cathedral. Who is the singer? He sings Yaruski. His name is, the blonde hair.
It's a singer, Shaman.
Yeah, that's right. And that Yaruski song is very powerful. And the Russians fighting in Donbass and Ukraine, they're not having to kidnap them off the street, you know, and force them into a van and give them 3 days training and then send them to the meat grinder. In Russia, the train comes in and the soldiers get off and people are greeting them, you know, and then the boys are signing up. They don't have to be, beaten to be recruited, because there's a different motivation. And, you know, it's this, the Ukraine war, I mean, I don't know, people are even interested anymore, but in the Soviet Union, yeah, that's the video. It's unbelievable. It's very powerful. And he has a wooden cross around his neck, shaman. But in the Soviet Union, Ukraine was like Long Island is part of New York State. And Ukraine becomes as a fluke of history of a separate a country with a breakup of the Soviet Union. But Ukraine was part of Russia. Most of Ukraine was part of Russia. Lenin, for political purposes inside the Soviet Union, made part of that territory, which means like the frontier or the borderland. That's why it was always called the Ukraine, not a country called Ukraine. So it's a very sensitive subject for Ukrainians today if you say the Ukraine, because it's reminding them that it just means the borderland, you know, the area between Europe and Russia, the frontier land. But yeah, that Lenin and then Khrushchev in the 60s, for just internal Soviet Union political reasons, transferred the authority to Kiev. But nobody was thinking at the end of the Soviet Union that this would be a separate country. And it is, but the eastern third of it is completely Russian-speaking, Russian tradition, Russian culture. So from 2014 until today, this war has been going on. And I always say, whether we're discussing Iran or Ukraine, it depends on when your history starts. If your history starts in 2022, then yeah, Russia is invading. If your history starts centuries ago or in 2014, it's different. And in Iran, does your history start in 1953 with the CIA overthrowing the elected government? Or, you know, when does your history start? But in both cases, the history is very complex and you have to peel things apart. I'm sorry to be
correct.
I just go on like that.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, let's start with this, you know, really the Russia become kind of the, you know, third Rome, and the Russian saying was there is a third Rome in Russia and there is never will be the fourth one. Well, literally right now, Russia may be the most free country despite we having this, you know, war with Ukraine. And it's also, we feel it because Ukrainians using the technology, especially the Starlink of Elon Musk, are trying to attack by drones deep inside the territory. Of course, using the all intelligence provided by the American all spy 16 agencies, they're having how to avoid radar, how to fly flow, and trying to attack refineries. But more often, they're attacking just, you know, normal buildings because they can't really heat heavy. But especially in the border areas, there is daily we have the casualties because they're attacking the residential buildings, they're attacking the schools, they're killing just a car with only civilians on it. Nevertheless,
the communication link for the guidance for these drones, and also for sea drones in the Black Sea, the guidance system is a Starlink.
And you know, recently, because the Russian side also used to have these Starlinks, but what they did, and Musk gave in to the Ukrainians' demand and actually used the whitelist, you know, and block anything else which was not in this list provided by Ukrainians. So we're adapting. We launch our own system equivalent of the, you know, Starlink. Of course, it will require some time to build in the same magnitude and scale, but it's going on. Still, it's a difficult terrain, and the war completely changed. So if you look on the perspective, despite that we are in a war situation, government tried to keep Russia as open as possible. There is, as you saw from the many, stories, just look on the Russian TV, you see that the Moscow really now one of the most safest, most beautiful cities in the world, with the best second to the none public transport, with the fintech. It's very safe.
When you see the Russian metro system, and it's like each station is an art gallery, and the New York or Paris is people urinating naked, taking a shit in the train.
Correct. Yeah. And this is again the sharp contrast. That's why many foreigners now moving in Russia, and you know the Russia trying to work up a scheme where all those who are sharing conservative value, who are respecting the God, who willing to bring their kids, you know, without this influence of the Epstein coalition or pedophile rings, you know, they basically welcome in Russia. Yes, of course, despite all the sanctions, you know, we are trying to preserve at least normal life, as you're right. In Russia, there is no forceful conscription. Everybody who go and sign the contract is voluntarily. They are paid for this one. So it's also painful because, you know, we also having casualties. But let me tell you one thing. What was surprising that till now, there is a lot of volunteers who are gathering whatever is needed for our boys in the front lines. If they are missing something, like, you know, sometimes there is generators, sometimes the winter stuff for them, sometimes this, you know, drones, or, you know, thermal vision, something like that. Everything, people gathering, we are preparing it and sending it, and everybody does it. So it's really become kind of the unifying entire nation for past 4 years. There is so many stories of volunteers, so many stories of those who went and risking their life in the front lines, helping civilians who've been liberated. And when you see these civilians who've been under the Ukrainian rules for so many years, and they refused to be evacuated. They've been waiting for the Russians.
And already rebuilding cities like Mariupol. Rebuilding.
Correct. Yeah, I'm, visiting also the Donbas region. And for me, you know, every time you're coming, you see these changes. It's very, very important. But as you're right, look, first of all, result of this war was planted long time ago with the Lenin decision, as you said. Because let's go to the root reasons of this story. First of all, Bolshevik Revolution was the globalist project, you know, to overthrow the Tsarist regime and do the first social experiment.
Lenin was sent from New York to Finland Station to Moscow by New York bankers, sending a pathogen.
Yeah. Not Lenin alone, because they sent him from Switzerland in the seal, you know, car of the railways, you know, through the Germany, enemy Germany, just intentionally, you know, keeping them. Let's send him to Russia. But the Trotsky and his group, basically this whole group of the world Bolsheviks, basically, yeah, was sent from New York on the special, you know, steamer. They came about 800 of them, and they basically was the core of this Russian revolution. What they did
men like Armand Hammer, who was like a George Soros, he's like kind of a George Soros of that century, and he is thinking, if I wreck Russian society, destroy it, then I will be on the ground floor of whatever is coming up for grain deals, for oil deals. I can't come into the Russian society pre-Bolshevik Revolution. I'm nobody. But if we wreck the society and destroy it, whatever is rebuilt on that foundation, I'll be a kingmaker. And this is this is like color revolution formula.
And look, what's happened when this, Bolshevik project globalist, basically it was the first, successful project of the globalist of destruction of the root, culture of the, Russia. What they did, first of all, they tried to rebrand and destroy the religion. We know that
we're coming to a break. We got like 20 seconds to a break, but go ahead. Continue.
After the break, what they did, they start to pillaging the churches, removing every valuables and sending them by the truckloads to the West for sale, because any normal church would accumulate at least several kilos of the gold, dozen kilos of the silver. And this was one of the reasons why they went after the church, first of all.
I'm holding in my hands two compounds that are guaranteed to change your life. T3, pure atomic iodine, nobody else has it, it's next level, and ultra methylene blue, medical grade methylene blue. These two products together supercharge the mitochondria of the cells, clean out the body, and are game changers. Iodine is essential, meaning you die without it. The UN admits that most people that have cognitive disabilities is because of lack of iodine. You add ultra methylene blue to this, it supercharges everything. Ladies and gentlemen, T3 is now available at DallasTheStore.com, the very best iodine that we know of that exists. There may be better, we'll adopt that if we can, but this is the best for sale we found, and we have the best medical grade, ultra methylene blue. Get yours now, right now, if you're a VIP member, for 50% off, regular customers, 25% off. It funds the info war, but more importantly, it is a game changer. If you don't take my advice and try this, you're insane. All you gotta do is try it, you'll be blown away. Take action now, DallasTheStore.com, to get T3, now available, and methylene blue at DallasTheStore.com.
What's this? Oh, I've got Power Plan. Oh, what's this? I've got Methyl Drive. The two ingredients in the Power Drive bundle, which is available at thealexjonesstore.com. Take them. Pure power, pure energy, raise testosterone, improve mitochondrial function, methylation genes in enzymatic processes throughout the body. Pairs perfectly, absolutely perfectly with Methylene Blue. These are the two products made to work in conjunction together with Methylene Blue. I made them, I developed them, high quality mineral blends, methylation blends, adaptogenic herbs, functional mushrooms, and the CoQ10, the PQQ. What you want for metabolic health and mitochondrial function. I want you to win today. I want you to succeed. Take out the enemy. Choose freedom.
I am making this historic announcement on Friday, December 12th, 2025. The future of InfoWars hangs in the balance. It is in your hands. They're having a state auction in January next year in about a month, but we don't even have the money for payroll or for satellites or for bandwidth. We've got this next shot to survive, but if we don't get the funds in, we shut down. So, we're selling three emergency limited edition posters at InfoWarsStore.com right now that are critical to us staying on the air. And I want to encourage you to go now to get I Have Not Yet Begun to Fight, John Paul Jones poster, and two others, Make No Peace with Evil and Defend the West, Iconic Crusades. Go now to InfoWarsStore.com to get one or more of these iconic posters, limited edition. We cannot do it without you. I have fired the bat signal. Take action now if you want to stand with us in this fight at InfoWarsStore.com, and I salute you for your support. I know you're the big health guy. You're way better shape than I am. Don't kick my ass. I've seen you working out with the Liver King. You say you've taken methylene blue before. I want you to take our medical grade. It takes 30 minutes to kick in. So good for your body. I'd like you to drink this, Jay. You said earlier, what? I appreciate it. I want to get your true review. It doesn't work? Tell me. Here it is, brother.
He's yours.
Looks just like the stuff from Doom, the water of life. He's drinking the juice of a strangled, drowned sandworm right now. Baron Harkonnen is not happy. We're going to see what happens.
20 minutes later.
I feel like my brain is clearer and working faster. It feels like my brain and my energy have had the accelerator hit on them. I felt it in my brain and my energy.
Well,
I'm going to get me some before I leave.
We're going to give you a couple bottles of it, bro. We love it. It's amazing. Get yours now, thealexshowstore.com.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones. Live from Austin, Texas, broadcasting worldwide, it's Alex Jones. And now, your host, Matt Bracken.
Okay, I'm back with Victor Boot, and I wanted to explore a little bit and compare the Ukraine war and the Iran war in several aspects. There's a saying, I believe it's Napoleon, he said, the morale is to the material as 3 to 1. I think that's I'm remembering that, but meaning the morale, the psychological health of a society, of your army, is 3 times more important than the logistics. And the United States in the beginning of the Vietnam War in the early 60s was an extremely patriotic country. We were very still remembering Second World War, Korean War, and there was a draft, conscription. Soldiers were drafted, they didn't complain, they put on the uniform. The beginning of Vietnam, the first years of Vietnam War, was very high morale and high patriotism, but it was ground down. This patriotism was ground down and wasted in a kind of a no-win situation. With a lot of memories now or comparisons to the Iran War, where the Pentagon press briefing is how many bombing raids, how many sorties, how many attacks. But, you know, they said in Vietnam, we won every battle and lost the war. Right. So we're now coming into this Iran war and the morale is already terrible and against this war, whereas we went into the Vietnam War with great morale and lost it. We're now starting a war with terrible morale, a war of choice that we're the aggressor. And in Russia, as a carry on from the Soviet Union days, the victory parades in May, it's not just a big parade in Moscow. Every city and town, the veterans are honored. The Great Patriotic War, which was a war of annihilation against the Soviet Union and Russians, that they survived it. And every Russian today can say, my great grandfather, my great uncle was killed or, you know, is a veteran. In Iran, their great patriotic war is the 8-year war from 1980 to 1988, which was Iraq invading Iran when Iran was still very in a state of flux and confusion after the revolution. Their standing military, the Shah's military, had been disbanded. There wasn't really a new military yet. And this is when both the Soviet Union and America were afraid of this new Ayatollah regime, so both supported Saddam Hussein, primarily a CIA client. We even gave him chemicals to make sarin gas to use on Iranians, and they didn't surrender. The very key oil fields and gas fields and oil infrastructure is right at the union of Iraq and Iran. So when coming in 100 kilometers into Iran takes their best territory for gas and oil. And the Iranians did not surrender. They did not shatter as a people. You know, that a formal backed military attacked them and they had nothing like that. They had to fight essentially with their bare hands, and we mock this and say it's terrible, but even, you know, children going to the front, but the point is that culture didn't break, it didn't shatter. And today, the West in America, we think
any country that takes this kind of punishment, they must be ready to surrender. We don't understand their mentality, that they're not going to surrender. They're not going to.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. As you mentioned, first of all, big underestimation that just starting the bombing, they're going to, you know, do the regime change. You know, and it's funny to watch, like, the Trump saying, oh, I'm coming to liberate you. Because, you know, all these protests orchestrated, again, by the West. Of course, in Iran, there is also very vibrant democracy. And people feel free to go and protest. Yes, they protested about, you know, inflation. They protested about something. And the Trump saying, oh, you know, but when the protests cross the line, like anywhere else, you know, and start killing the innocent, you know, or police, who, in matter of fact, was not stopping them from protesting peacefully. But somebody was supplying them with the guns. Somebody was supplying them. And the first day of the protest last year, there is a very big number of the, first of all, policemen was killed. You know, government official was killed. It's purely orchestrated eventually by Mossad and Western spy agencies, you know, attempt to cause a colored revolution. It doesn't went through. And usually...
And in fact, there were 50... there was 50,000 Starlinks. 50,000 50,000 Starlinks brought in. And this is key also in the Ukraine situation, because apparently with Russian help in the cyber realm, the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps figured out how to locate these Starlinks, because the key of a Starlink is that it's a beamed it's not a radio like transmitting in omnidirection. It's a very tight focused beam going up, and then it clicks from satellite to satellite as they're passing, but the beam is very tight. So in order to locate the Starlinks, and then take them out of the equation, this was a critical part of the January 2026 Iran riots to get rid of the Starlinks. And I wonder how that relates back to Ukraine with, you know, Elon Musk has terminated Starlink access on the Russian side. But to be able to locate these Starlinks, I think a lot of it has to do with how long they're used. That you can't just leave a Starlink like on your window, like a satellite television dish. If you have a Starlink and it's being used for a long time, it has a chance of being tracked than a military Starlink in Ukraine, where it's camouflaged, it's turned on for 30 seconds to make a link, used, and then it's either abandoned or... But this Starlink technology is really important, both in understanding what's going on in Iran and in Ukraine.
Correct, but you see, Iranians succeeded to, first of all, sort out that attempt, completely repel. But when the United States was pushed by Israel to start this attack, unprovoked, basically, you know.
The February 28 attack.
Correct. And what they did by killing the leadership, they thought that, oh, people will go on the street and, you know, protest and take power or do the regime change. In fact, it's happened opposite. People went on the street and consolidated around those who've been really telling, like, hey, doesn't matter what we're going to defend. They put aside all their differences, all their grievances, whatever they happen. And look, they are mobilized. Right now, Iranians are mobilized, I think, up to the 10 million volunteers. Part of them helping as a civilian volunteers to go through the rubbles, to clean up the streets, to, you know, distribute whatever is needed. But Iran had a very resilient system of the management, not only on the command on high level of this, but everything is functional. You know,
yeah, the mosaic strategy. Strategy.
But apart from this, all local authorities and the line of command, even for civilian part, are functioning. They're still distributing, you know, the special coupons which allowed people, you know, from lower income to have, you know, supplemental purchases of the food. They are really very well thought society with a social network. And think of this, price of the gas in Iran. It's like a, you know, fraction of what, you know, people paying in the United States. So,
yes, to take a train from one side of Iran to another is $8. And to fill your gas tank is like not even $1. It may be million reals or $1.
So basically, Iranians like Russians, we want to be left alone and, you know, not be, you know, provoke for any, you know, aggression of this. So they're doing right. They're defending themselves and they've been very well prepared for it. We need to give them the, first of all, the credit for their courage. For that, there is utmost we see no single big high level treason going on. And definitely they withstand. Moreover, as you said, morale is a 1-3, you know, or 3-1. So they have a very high level of the moral grounds. When the American troops will send there, including for the, you know, ground operation, really in their hearts don't know what they're doing there. What kind of the national interest America have by occupying or destroying or killing, matter of fact, Iranians, or destroying their civilization like President Trump was threatening them. So this is just causing somewhere deep inside the blood of Iranians like any other ones, like deep inside the blood of Russians when enemy come to your land to protect it, to liberate your own people. Never let that happen. Yes, this is a vicious war, especially when the Israelis are bombing unnecessary civilian infrastructure, committing so many military crimes, you know, war crimes, without even giving the thought, second thought, hey, why, what is a military purpose of this? Just to scare people off? Heck no, they would not be scared. So what, you're going to punish the population? You're going to kill the just civilians? And just, you know, a month ago or 40 days ago, you've been telling, oh, we're coming to liberate you. And now you want just to level entire Iran from the map. It ain't happening. So basically, this conflict, and the resilience which Iranian shows with their patriotism and, you know, firmness put Trump into corner. He have no any good exit strategies at all, and doesn't matter what he gonna do to extract himself from this conflict will cause him to more and more damages. And if he would be honest man, like, okay, you must step forward, admit that this was an error, you know, do the stuff and at least negotiate in a good spirit. But what do you think from Iranians if they sent, you know, Kushner and the Witkov to negotiate together with the GD Vance? And Kushner and Witkov just negotiated with them while they knew that they're going to kill next day their leadership. So
the sneak attack.
How are you going to trust your, you know, negotiations? And, I don't know.
When I grew up, when I was in the, you know, 1960s and 70s, the thinking in the United States was, about Hiroshima. Whenever the subject Hiroshima came up, we would say, you Japanese started it at Pearl Harbor. Now, I know it's much more complicated. There were sanctions. Japan was being pushed into a corner with sanctions. But before that, they had invaded Manchuria. So it's nobody was perfectly like clean, like driven snow. But in the American mind, when you cross the line is Pearl Harbor, the kinetic attack. That is a sneak attack. And so Americans said, you start the war with a sneak attack. Don't complain if we end it with an atom bomb. Don't start a war with a sneak attack. Okay. Now, February 28th, we did something in my mind worse than the Japanese because in December 7th, the Japanese broke the diplomatic relations before Pearl Harbor. Maybe not long before, but like, half a day before, and if nobody in Washington is paying attention, they can say, well, that's your problem. You're not paying attention. To have your airplanes together at the airfield in Pearl Harbor. And they had to sneak The Japanese had to come all the way across the Pacific. Very dangerous operation. At any point crossing the Pacific, some Pan Am China Clipper airplane or patrol aircraft can spot this fleet, and the surprise is gone. So they took the risk coming all the way across the Pacific. And when they attacked Pearl Harbor, they were attacking with Japanese aircraft with the Japanese insignia right on them. And before the attack, they broke the diplomatic relations. No more negotiations. We left the negotiations and said, we'll see you on Monday, more negotiations. And then Saturday morning, we do the sneak attack. And we're now using the Israeli Gaza and Beirut rule, which is, one man, and maybe he's in this apartment building, one man. So put a 2,000-pound bomb or Tomahawk missile in this building, because maybe one man that we want to kill is in this building. All the neighbors, family, we don't care. Like the schoolgirls that were killed in the first Tomahawk attacks. 170 schoolgirls in Iran. Sorry, but it was not a declared war. Not a declared war. Sneak attack. And when I grew up, sneak attack was like the black hat cowboy that shoots the other cowboy in the back. That's the sneak attack. An honorable cowboy, he doesn't shoot in the back.
Correct. Best of all, yeah, you said there is an erosion of this, at least, you know, rules and tradition of the war engagement. As you said, there is no official announcement of the war. There is no official, you know, this. It was in midst of the negotiations. So this is completely nullified, you know, the trust or any international, I would say, tradition or more than the law, because law was disregarded, international law, already for past 10 years, slowly, and it was completely dismantled by the Trump. But this is not end of it. I would even compare what's going on with this reptilian, you know, shifters or whatever you name it, you know, reptiloids, who really in control, because such absence of the empathy, such absence of the, I would say, you know, any humanistic thoughts about, hey, why we need to do this, why we need to destroy, which is the true for Israeli regime, which is the true for those who in Pentagon planned this action, especially killing this girl in Iran in the school for no reason, and then still investigating without admitting, you know, yes, it's, you know, was a mistake or something. No, it was very well planned. And eventually, this was a sacrifice to their, you know, a satanic cult of the innocent children, just to scare of the people of Iran, to say, hey, yeah,
and you know, the Nuremberg trials in 1945-46, a lot of people are saying, well, you know, I don't care, I wish the Germans had won, and so forth. And I'm not even taking a position on the legality of the Nuremberg trials. People say Soviet Union, they killed even more people than the Nazis. Okay. But the only thing I'm going to say is Keitel and Jodl and these other generals, Hermann Goering, when they started this war in 1939, attacking Poland, and then 1941, Barbarossa attacking Soviet Union, they never, or 1940 attacking France and attacking Battle of Britain with the air power, they never thought maybe we lose this war and then we're going to be held responsible and we're going to be hanged. And the hanged, which they were. Hitler is already dead, with, you know, killed in the bunker by his own hand, I think. But these generals never thought maybe someday somebody will hold us responsible for this. And in the Nuremberg trial, and I'm not taking a position on the legality of, you know, having Soviets and Americans trying Germans. But the main charge is planning and waging a war of aggression, a war you start. You know, you attack Pearl Harbor, Poland. There is a peace. Maybe there's sanctions. Maybe there's economic warfare, but not tanks, not Stuka bombers, right? And that when they were hanged, these German generals are hanged, the first charge is planning and waging and conducting a war of aggression, starting a war. And we started this war. We, America, started this war February 28th. And Franklin Roosevelt said September 7th is a date that will live in infamy. And I think February 28th is a date that will live in infamy.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. But moreover, look, Matt, very important stuff is going on now, because now especially Germany is really trying to rebuild the another Reich, you know, and militarize themselves.
Honestly,
just like what, yesterday or today, even the chancellor of the Germany, Merz, was telling when he was meeting the Ukrainian president Zelensky, which is expired one, telling, oh, Ukrainian will win because we will do everything. And guess what? This is a grandchildren. He's a grandfather, you know, from both sides.
And USA blew up the Nord Stream pipeline, you know, with liquid natural gas on a ship costs four times more than liquid natural gas in a pipe. And the pipeline going to Germany was keeping Germany competitive with economically. And who destroyed Nord Stream pipeline? USA.
Correct. And
our ally,
over,
USA.
You know, look, the Germany wants to commit economical suicide. Eventually, they already committed. You know, German industry are not any more competitive if you need to buy the LNG from United States. But guess what? Go and buy it now when Qataris is out of the market. So the price of LNG tripled within the last month. So forget about all the, you know, machinery building or chemistry, petrochemical industry in Germany, where we've been famous for. And right now, only way for them is, okay, let's go again, you know, fight Russia. Maybe we grab their, you know, resources. Well, let me tell you.
It's a dream. It's fantasy.
When the Ukrainians would be finished this war, because the slogan, let's fight to the last Ukrainians, is literally, you know, globalists don't think that Ukrainians are normal people. That's why they're catching them on the street, sending them to the Minsk grinder, and they, you know, dying in a huge proportion. When you see when the Russia just recently did exchange of the bodies with Ukraine, it's always go 1 to 30, 1 to 50. You know, Russia gave to Ukraine last time 1,000 bodies and received back 24. So are they talking about, you know, casualties? They just killing old people.
It's a genocide of Ukrainian men. And who are they going to replace these men with? India, Pakistan?
It's not even that, because when the Ukrainians will be finished, you know, last Ukrainian will be dying, they're going to, you know, throw their Polacks, they're going to throw Romanians, they're going to throw, you know, Slovakians, now Hungarians, if they would be stupid enough and buy this and drink this Kool-Aid of this suicidal sect who is running them, you know. So this is Europe.
I hope it doesn't finish. You know, we only have 2 minutes. And I know you have thoughts, and I do too. Trump, as a narcissist, he has got extreme ego problem, but I think he is blackmailed 100%. 100%.
Correct.
The Melania press conference was for her protection. She went out and said this without, for her protection. He's under blackmail control from Mossad. Mossad is the controlling of Trump 100%, I believe.
Well, not only Trump, I guess the entire White House in the direct control of the, you know, Israelis. Like, you know, Netanyahu was bragging, well, G.D. Vance called me from the plane returning from Islamabad to give me a report. They're reporting me on every step of the process. So, you know, good luck to, I think, you know.
Kushner and Witkoff were his handlers.
Yeah, but I think, you know, there is a time in America to start new liberation war. This time, not against the crown, but against the, you know, Israeli control of your government.
Okay. And this we have only half a minute left to go, and I've really enjoyed this conversation. I hope we do it. Victor and I are both on X using our real names. Real Victor Boot and Matt underscore Bracken 48. So we are not afraid. We use our real name on the internet. And we'll see you on X.
Take care.
I want to make a massive announcement right now. I mean, this is just bonker town. What it does is just... I feel 20 years younger. I'm not kidding you. Ultra Methylene Blue.
I know. I love it. This stuff works, man.
I just can't shut up about it. Ultra Methylene Blue. I mean, this is just bonker town. I just can't shut up about it. Ultra Methylene Blue. I just can't shut up about it. Get yours now at thealexshowstore.com. It is just beyond spectacular. Ultimate Life Force. That's the name of the new product. This is hands down the strongest, most powerful spike protein detox out there with triple action, taking all the major best-selling certified safe formulas and integrating it in to just a massive daily dose. And it isn't just to clean out your blood, ladies and gentlemen. It is so good for your whole body. It's got 400 milligrams of NAC alone. That is the precursor to glutathione. And just does incredible things for your whole body. Not just that, the energy, the stamina, all of it. Ladies and gentlemen, we're so excited about this formula. I don't have time to get into all the other great ingredients in it. Go to thealexshowstore.com right now and check it out for yourself. This is so game-changing. Lesser formulas have already helped so many people that I've personally bought them for and, you know, given them to friends and family. This is amazing. Get yours now at thealexshowstore.com for 50% off.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.